call a public hearing to order. This is anyone who wishes to speak regarding the 2008-2009 Tompkins Community Cortland operating budget. Please stand up and address us through the mic. If anyone's here to speak to that topic. Seeing no one, I will close the public hearing and invite you to join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
A roll call of members.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Present.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stevenson?
Present.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chapp?
Here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Mr. Hattery?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Ms. McAsey?
Here.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Mr. Randall has asked to be excused. Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Kuplink-Alaire?
Here.
14 members present.
And some year we'll have government operations take up this issue of why we have to do a roll call because we can see each other here. But I'll address that later on. Petitions, communications, and notices. On the desk?
Oh, communications are on the desks.
And there's no special orders of the day. We have privilege of the floor for the public. I have two people who have signed up in advance, but others can speak after them. I'll start with Sylvester Johnson. Can you state your name and where you live?
Sylvester Johnson, Brooktondale. I'm here to speak about the carbon tax resolution. Escape clauses get written into the legislation for cap and trade that contradict the system's reason for being, to lower the cap on emissions. One variation that's written into all the more recent legislation for cap trade is the borrowing of permits from future years. Under cap and trade, consumers will pay the fees extracted by traders, brokers, attorneys, and an entrenched bureaucracy, as well as suffer the uncertainty due to trading's increased energy cost variability, which could act as a significant drag on the economy. A study by the Congressional Budget Office found that an actual federal carbon tax would be substantially more financially efficient in reducing carbon emissions than cap trade. A tax is less expensive because it's simpler. A tax is better for the economy, especially with the majority of all or all of the revenues refunded. Tax and refund is more equitable than the covert tax of trading. The benefits of the refund provide strong incentives for both consumer and business groups to lobby for it to actually be made. A tax increases the value of projects such as renewable energy sources by increasing the cost of fossil fuels. A tax makes renewables easier to invest in because returns on the investments can be estimated more accurately than under trading's increased variability. For the tax to have a chance of enactment, a wholehearted push needs to be made to alert our federal representatives of the need of a tax. An actual federal carbon tax will be more effective because it is less readily abused and be raised periodically to meet emission reduction goals, also increasing the refund. For the tax to have a chance of enactment, a wholehearted push needs to get made. With the political bandwagon for cap trade already rolling, powered by its beneficiaries, it's not necessary to endorse it as an alternative in the resolution. I urge you to amend to delete the alternative of cap trade from the resolution, not denying the possibility that it may get enacted, but not endorsing it either. The consequent resolution fully in favor of the tax would make a stronger statement than the present hobbled resolution and would have my support. Cap trade is a Rube Goldberg machine with many places to go wrong. A tax keeps it simple with greater reliability. Let's not put the earth-critical process of reducing emissions into the hands of brokers who are cutting deals. This is the overarching environmental public policy decision of our era. Let's at least make a strong statement in favor of the more reliable choice. Please consider amending to delete the second resolve. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Ken Miller.
Ken Miller, I have a farm in Dragon. And I hope that you'll take up the Ag District again tonight. The last meeting you tabled it till then, asking me if I would meet with the village. A person from the village asked me to come down there, and I said, well, if we're going to discuss this, that's one thing. If just tell my side of the story, I've done that at the public hearing. After I gave my spiel and answered all the questions I believe that they had, left so that they could discuss it without interference from myself. I went and looked in the minutes, asked the clerk about the minutes. They didn't discuss a thing. I felt I got there a little under false pretenses. And you already heard my side of the discussion last time at a public hearing. That's what I want to say this time is that this the state sets up an Ag Land Protection Board. That board has done an outstanding job for this county. It looks at the soil types, sites, goes out and visits sites. It has involved towns and villages in their decision-making process as to what land they feel is important to have in an ag district. A lot of people put a lot of time and effort into that. I feel that I'm doing what the village would like, what the town would like, and what this county would like. Open space is important to this county. I feel by what I'm doing is keeping open space, and what I'm asking for is some protection against rules and regulations that might hamper me, yet they still want my property to be in open space. So I'm asking you to vote yes on the ag district, put my land back in an ag district. And I kind of feel that a no vote would mean a slap in the face of the Ag Land Protection Board, who has done an awful lot of work to make a decision as to whether this is a good thing or a bad thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. So anyone else who'd like to speak under privilege of the floor? Gene?
Hi, I'm a little nervous, I guess. Yeah, I'm also here to speak to the carbon tax issue and to recommend that you not include the cap trade. My name is Jean Fidella, as some of you know, and I'm speaking also for the Climate Change Action Group of Central New York, which is based here in Ithaca in the county. Is this working okay? Okay. Two collaborations of environmental justice advocates originating on the east and west coasts of the U.S. have taken unequivocal positions against carbon trading. In February 2008, environmental justice organizations in California released a declaration against the use of carbon trading schemes to address climate change. Since the release of the declaration, organizations across the country have signed on calling for a rejection of trading schemes and offsets in favor of real reductions in fossil fuel use and greenhouse gas emissions. There were initially 18 organizations. Now there are 52, including the Climate Change Action Group and a group in Elmira called Ladies of Charity. This month, 28 organizations under the Climate Justice Leadership Forum, which also spans the country, have taken it a step further from condemning carbon trading to actively supporting the carbon tax. Both coalitions agree that the climate system of the planet and the energy choices we make are inextricably linked to a looming ecological and social catastrophe, and the best available science indicates that the planet is warming more rapidly than we understood, as we keep seeing evidence every day. Carbon trading is undemocratic as a solution because it allows entrenched polluters, market designers, and commodity traders to determine whether and where to reduce greenhouse gases and co-pollutant emissions without allowing impacted communities or governments to participate in those decisions. The political power of the major global polluters has resulted in carbon trading schemes that include inadequate reporting systems, are impossible for the public and regulatory agencies to monitor, allow gaming of the system by market participants, and lack meaningful penalties for failure to comply. A cap-and-trade carbon reduction system is fraught with uncertainties, lacks transparency, and creates large opportunities for emitting facilities to engage in fraud through underreporting and inflating historic emissions levels. The initial total cap is likely to be inflated because facilities have a strong financial incentive to inflate historic emissions levels. A cap-and-trade system is expensive and resource-intensive from start to finish, including the creation of a new regulatory structure, determining and setting a cap on monitoring emissions. Such system creates a volatile market that does not create incentives to invest in new technologies. It also makes economic planning difficult because the market price, lacking regulation, is not consistent and is difficult for businesses to predict. A cap-and-trade system places the financial burden on consumers through higher energy costs and has historically resulted in large windfall profits for industry emitters and the creation, implementation, and likely failure of such system to produce measurable reductions in emissions will significantly delay national and global reductions in emissions. Implementing an international, federal, regional, or local cap-and-trade carbon reduction system is a waste of precious time and resources. How much more time do I have?
About a minute.
Oh, great. The second coalition that specifically supports the carbon tax also asserts that an environmentally sustainable and environmentally just carbon reduction system would regulate carbon emissions and tax every emission emitted by polluting facilities, regardless of historic emissions. A carbon tax can ensure predictability and create immediate incentives for emitters to invest in new cleaning technology for polluting facilities. A carbon tax would provide a revenue stream to support research and development of necessary technologies and could provide financial assistance to mitigate economic burdens on impacted workers and communities. A carbon tax is relatively simpler and easier to implement than a carbon trading system, as a system structure for taxation already exists and could be phased in gradually. Thank you.
Thank you, Jean. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak under privilege of the floor on any topic? Please use the mic and state your name and residence for the record.
Hi, my name is Margaret McCaslin, and I live at 511 First Street, and I also own property in the town of Ithaca. I'd like to share a few of the many reasons why so many people prefer carbon tax to carbon trading, including myself, a science and environmental educator, my daughter, an ecologist and environmental lawyer, who used to help corporations and businesses in Australia buy carbon offsets and to trade carbon pollution credits. The Climate Change Action Group, based here in Ithaca, plus most economists and environmental organizations that have studied the issue. Groups working on both global warming and on environmental justice have especially preferred a carbon tax. One local resident suggested that we avoid the loaded word tax by calling revenue from extracting carbon-based fuels a low-carbon fund. Due to 150-plus years of burning carbon-based fuels at ever-increasing rates, we have already changed the climate, even here in central New York. All this extra CO2, well beyond what our ecosystems naturally produce, has thickened Earth's atmospheric blanket so much that it retains more heat than our biological systems can handle. After the topsy-turvy and often sweltering spring we just had, I'm sure you all agree that we have to reduce emissions of heat-trapping gases as quickly as possible. The entire world faces even more extreme weather in the near future, droughts and lethal heat waves and their related water shortages and forest fires, floods and mudslides, more frequent and more destructive hurricanes and tornadoes. I mean, these have all been happening, but they're going to happen more. But there are more serious consequences which we can still prevent, such as sea levels rising enough to flood many coasts. Therefore, we have to reduce not maintain or increase, but reduce significantly our use of carbon-based fuels. Problems with cap and trade. Cap and trade's been a virtual Trojan horse, looking like a good idea for the environment as well as the economy. But in fact, as implemented so far, it has only been good for corporations doing the polluting and the lawyers and brokers doing the trading, resulting in higher cost, limited emissions, and questionable offsets, limited reductions in emissions. In order to consider a cap-and-trade scheme that would actually help slow or reverse global warming, there are four essential mandates. The caps would have to be based on the work of climate scientists and not be set by corporations whose executives place their own short-term profits above the planet's livability. There can't be an escape clause where the caps are lifted if carbon-based fuels get too expensive. We can't say that some sectors of the economy matter more than ecosystems which affect all people and living things. Too much CO2 for a livable environment is too much CO2. We need to pay the true costs of burning fossil fuels. All trades have to be based on accurately verified emissions, not on self-reporting or on estimates, which has been past practice. All offsets, fourth, need to be verifiable and truly be ecological, reducing the need for burning carbon or removing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere.
I'd like to sum up, Margaret.
Okay. The problem with my list of mandates is that by the time you get through with all that, cap and trade has actually become a very expensive and unwieldy system. There are many advantages to a carbon tax, but basically, returning to the term a low-carbon fund, which could be financed by taxing fossil fuels at the point of their extraction. Such a fund could be used to expand the generation of safe renewable energy, reduce the need for carbon-based fuels through conservation and efficiency, and give rebates and subsidies to low and moderate income families, and lastly, create green jobs in local communities. A carbon fund where the tax happens at the point of extraction would build both a safer environment and a truly sustainable economy for all people. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak? We'll move on to privilege of the floor for legislators. Carol.
Before that, I'd like to just thank the people who came to speak and let them know where it stands on the agenda. So okay. That they can decide what to do, which since it's a member filed resolution, it is way down there on the agenda. I don't know if our process allows us to move it up.
I'll see if we can move it up. But to start, privilege of the floor for legislators, I have Mike Hattery with the Youth Award.
Well, this is not as much fun as carbon tax, right? Mom and Dad, come on up. This really is the most fun thing we did. And Frank, this is partly your idea, and you like the legislature to have a little more fun than we normally do, right?
Yeah, we always have fun. Poker, fuck.
Yeah. I haven't seen it in a while. I'm going to steal a little bit of your thunder, Glenn, and read from the nomination here for the Youth Award. These two young gentlemen are from Dryden. I'm nominating Zachary and Michael Kirsch, who reside at 5 Pebble Drive in the village of Dryden. Let me introduce you to each of these young men. Zach is 17 years old and a senior at Dryden High School. Zach will be graduating with honors this June and is planning to enter RIT this fall. He'll be majoring in aeronautical engineering. During his years in Dryden, Zach has been involved in Certines, jazz ensemble, and pep band. Zach has participated in the Science Olympiad, National Honor Society, and SALT, which stands for Students After the Living Truth. Being part of the Dryden United Methodist Church is a big part of Zach's life. He has long served as an acolyte, worked at the election night dinner, and participated in the crop walk. As you know, the crop walk raises money and awareness to help stamp out hunger in our community. Michael is 14 years old. Is that still right? Yeah, is today is your birthday? Happy birthday. 15 today. Michael is 15 years old and is currently a freshman at Dryden High School. Though young in years, Michael has always been very advanced in his thoughts and shows extraordinary concern for the well-being of all those around him. Michael has been involved in Certines, Ensemble, Science Olympiad, and SALT. Along with his brother Zach, Michael has long been a church acolyte and also very active in the crop walk. Michael was a big part of raising pledges for the walkers. He spent many hours soliciting pledges both from church members and the Dryden community. Thanks in part to his efforts, the crop walk was a huge success. Both Michael and Zach are a pleasure to know and work with, very much like their parents, Stephen and Linda. They're very ambitious and unselfish workers. They're always the first ones to offer help to anyone in need. They're extremely well-mannered and show appreciation for any help that is given them. And Glenn indicates it's been his pleasure to nominate him for this award. Now that I've said everything that you wrote, would you like to add anything?
Just as I said, it is has been a pleasure to have known him for many years. And when we think about the negative things in our society, and the carbon tax thing kind of brings up something of a bleak future, we know that with more youth like this, that we do have a future.
Thank you. And I want to echo one note that he made at the close of his letter about Mike and Zach's parents. I've known them. They've lived down the street from me for a long time. And Steve, in particular, has benefited my household. He coached my son in both baseball and soccer. And he's also was very active for a long time with our in helping other youth in the community through our youth commission, and I know they both are involved in that way. So let me give you this award, and you're going to have to fight over where you're going to put it. It has both of your names on it.
I'll just take this as a birthday gift.
Would either one of you like to make any comments?
We're going to stop now.
Well, first I want to thank you all. This is it's quite an honor. And one of the things that Mr. Downey mentioned in the letter was a crop walk, which is going to be coming up again. It's something Church World Services does, and what we do is we raise money, going getting donations both through our church and through our community. And we go to Dryden Lake and walk around the lake. And it's for people who don't have resources like we do, who don't have a shopping, like a grocery store in their community, or don't have water at their sink, the motto is we walk because they walk. And so we get money. And one of the nice things about Crop Walk is it's not just to be sent overseas, but I know in Dryden, some of the money is given to the Kitchen Cupboard, which is to help people right in our community. So,
we have some other gifts here provided by our sponsors, which include
Bangs Ambulance.
Bangs Ambulance.
A&B
Engraving.
Purity.
Purity Ice Cream.
And the radio station.
And WHC or QGA Radio Group. So you can split those up as you want. Yes, congratulations.
Thank you, Michael. Any other legislators? I have Carol, then Jim.
I just wanted to take a minute to recognize that the Ithaca Festival is happening this the end of this week, June 19th to the 22nd, Thursday through Sunday. This year. There has been such a community outpouring of participation that they've had to expand the number of the venues, so that there'll be activities in Stewart Park and other places and downtown all of the days. The parade is Thursday at 6:30. Our own Office for the Aging COFA Board has a group marching in the parade. Anybody who would like to join that group is welcome to. They are group number 37, assembling around 6 or 6:30 down at Cayuga Street at around Lewis, if you look for group 37. And they have worked out a theme that works in umbrellas. So they're killing a few birds with one stone. Bring an umbrella if you'd like to march with that group. And I just want to point out that the theme this year is I Am Ithaca. And I think that that's just particularly apt because it's precisely when you sit down to define how it is you want to present yourself, whether you're going to march in the parade as a group or have a booth or do an act or whatever it is you're going to do, that you define your identity for yourselves. And there have just been groups all over the community spending the last few months or the whole year doing that, and I'd like to recognize them and thank them. It's a wonderful event. Come out for it.
Thank you. Jim Dennis?
Thank you, Michael. A lot of people showed up here for serious things, and this is not one. I woke up the other morning and noticed there was a story in the newspaper about one of our legislators who's a crime fighter. And I could not let it go by without recognizing that this evening. And I assembled some things that Elliot Ness, Sheriff Pat Garrett, or Frank Proto will need if he's going to continue this crime fighting. On his, and now I understand why he got a job with HSBC. But the first thing you're going to need is a snub nose 38, and don't try to get on an airplane with it; it won't work. And there's some extra loud caps that go with it that you can use. And if you happen to apprehend the person again, you can put these handcuffs on them, and I'll talk to you about that more later. But it just is amazing to me that one of us could get involved and do something like that. Being a huge fan of Law and Order, all due respect, Frank, catching those bad guys, I can't believe it. So at the end of the meeting, I will.
Very briefly, sir.
I think a lot of credit has to go to the Ithaca Police Department. If you saw when we called, when I had the opportunity to call, thanks, Jim. You're always thinking of me. I'm sure there's some of you that would like to use these on me sometimes. Or maybe this. When we met at the coffee shop identifying this individual, it was like the Hill Street Blues. The five cruisers zeroed in on this guy, and he wasn't going anywhere. So I really think the Ithaca police really deserve a real pat on the back. This was really, and it's a good thing no one got hurt, including the teller at the bank, because we weren't sure what was in that sock. We thought it was a gun. But thanks, Jim. I thought you were going to do something with NYSEG.
No. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Frank. And Martha Robertson.
Oh, this is nowhere near as much fun as that. I've got two public meetings to tell people about. Wednesday, June 25th, 7 to 8:30 at the Borgwarner Room of the Public Library. Water monitoring plan for the south end of Cayuga Lake. Very important meeting, public meeting, for people to hear about a plan that's being proposed by the Cayuga Lake Watershed Network. Call 532-4104 for more information. That's Wednesday, June 25th at 7 at the library. And for Varna residents or anybody who drives through Varna at any, especially rush hour, either in or out of town, June 30th, that's Monday, at the Varna Community Association, 7 p.m., we'll have our own Ed Marks and Fernando de Aragon available to talk about traffic mitigation through the hamlet of Varna, looking at the recommendations from the Route 13 corridor study that the Planning Department did last year. We wanted to really bring key proposals to the community's attention and get public input on that and see where to go with it. So that's June 30th, 7 p.m. at the Varna Community Association.
Thank you. Other legislators? Kathy Lou Cerrera.
It's dragon time. Some of y'all have already gotten an invitation, but I was looking to see, is there someone here from the city council? I mean, did we challenge them to a dragon boat race this year? I think we did.
In past years, we have.
I think we won a dragon from them in past years as well. So this year, we're willing to put our dragon up and challenge others. I think we may have challenged them. At any rate, I know that some legislators have already agreed, and some employees and their families have family members have offered to paddle this year on our boat. That's going to be part of the Ithaca. It's called the Ithaca International. Help me out here.
Finger Lakes. The Finger Lakes
International.
Yeah, Dragon Boat Festival. Yeah.
Finger Lakes International Dragon Boat Festival. The way I find it on the web when I'm looking for it is I either Google Ithaca Asian American Association or Ithaca Dragon Boat Club. And there's all kind of information. It's going to be on July 12th and 13th. This is turning into a real family, a fun tradition. It's an all-day thing. It's a blast. And I encourage everybody to attend. County employees and their families, that members that would like to paddle, can still contact me or is it appropriate to say they could contact Karen Fuller to see if they can get room? And there are practice slots for those of us that need to practice ahead of time. There are practice slots. So it's a lot of fun. And just for community information, it's a great event. And every year it's bringing more and more people. So you ought to do yourself a favor and come down to the inlet and check out the Dragon Festival on July 12th and 13th.
I have issued an official challenge with the Finger Lakes Parks because our former chair, but he has refused to respond today. Been at least a week in standing, so I'll have to.
But if they had a chance at that dragon, that might just motivate them.
Yeah. We'll have to tantalize them.
Egg. We're going to be talking to city.
Frank Proto.
Just like to add one thing to what Martha was reporting on regarding the water monitoring plan. The forum that's going to be held on the 25th is to discuss the monitoring plan. The emphasis is not on lake source cooling. They're too well integrated. The plan is the topic of the discussion that night. I'm sure questions will come up about the other, but just so that it's clear that when the Water Resources Council asked Sharon to put this together, it was with that in mind, just as clarification. And once again, I'd like to thank Jim Dennis for embarrassing me.
If there are no more privilege to the floor for legislators, we'll move on to municipal officials. Is anyone here from town or city who'd like to report? If not, we have a very crisp presentation from Martha Armstrong, and this is regarding Julia Maddock regarding the labor market study and workforce strategy. I will juggle the agenda later on to try to fit in some of the resolutions that staff are waiting for.
Area Development, and Julia Maddock and I will be giving you a 10-minute presentation on the workforce strategy, work we've accomplished so far, and work that's coming up. And I'm going to start with the work we've accomplished so far. And first I'd like to say I hope you remember that in 2006, most of you are probably aware that we, TCAD, created our current economic development strategy, came out at the end of 2006. And one of the three broad goals that were a part of that strategy is improving our workforce skills. And so early in 2007, we began discussing with the Workforce Investment Board how we could partner to proceed with creating a workforce strategy for the county. And I'm going to start by talking about what we've done so far, which is we went ahead and hired Chamora Economics and Analytics, a consultant out of Virginia, to come do a labor market study for us so that we would have a really good, thorough understanding of what our labor market looked like, what were the trends, what were some of the key issues from sort of a statistical point of view, so that then when we move on to our strategic planning, we have a good foundation to be looking at and understanding what are really the things we need to be focused on in our strategy. This is the labor market area that we looked at. It includes Tompkins County and the six counties that surround us immediately. And there are three components to the study. There are no big surprises in this study, but it does provide us a lot of depth of detail, helps define the scope of our labor market attributes, and also provides us some comparisons to benchmarks, primarily national. But we do look at county, regional, the seven-county region, and then state and national in many parts of the study. The first part is the regional profile. Some of the key findings are that growth is moderate in our labor market. We're about 0.8%, so a little below the U.S. Education, as you know, is the dominant industry here. We do have underemployment that is higher than the U.S. rate of underemployment. We have shortages of basic skill workers. But we do have good opportunities for economic growth due particularly to having higher education and a lot of innovative companies here. The second part of the study was an employer survey. Actually, the employer survey took place last October or November, and we called companies, about 400 or 500 companies in the seven-county area responded to the survey. Some of the key findings were that about 40% of employers felt that there were inadequacies in the workforce. The vacancy rates, and that means how long a job stays open when it's posted, are longer in certain sectors here than it would be nationally, so that's an issue for certain sectors. But on the very positive side, employers were expecting to expand. About half of them were expecting to expand, and that's quite a bit higher than the national level, so we really have quite a bit of optimism among the employers here in our region. The key findings of the economic forecast. First of all, as businesses do grow, the demand for labor is going to come primarily from replacements. Replacements is people who are retiring, people who are moving from the area, people who are maybe changing careers. And there will be, of course, some demand also for the net new growth, which is actual expansion of jobs. We will be projecting shortages primarily in the basic skilled, entry-level type occupations, and underemployment is likely to continue in our area. Continuing with the forecast, they're projecting that we'll have annually 1,400 net new jobs annually in the seven-county region, a little distribution there, plus we'll have over 30,000 replacements annually in the region. These figures do not include what's called churn, which is like if somebody works at Tops and then they're going to go to work at Wegmans or somewhere else in the retail sector. That's just churning. That's just moving your job around. This is all about really creating new jobs and then the replacements that are going to be required. I want to very quickly run now through just a sampling of the data so you know it's in the report. I'm jamming a 90-page report into 4 minutes to try to meet Michael's goal. But you can go on the web and see the full report, and so I just want to give you a taste of what will be there. And also you can ask us about separately if you're interested in these topics. Let's see, we have, the top 10 occupations. Sorry. Push buttons and flip pages and reach the microphone all at once. Underemployment. Did you hit the underemployment one? There we go. This one is the younger adults. You're going too fast. You went back. Okay, that's underemployment. Next is some detail about younger adult workers. And I want to also note the bottom end of that is their children. That's population going down. So really I need to pay attention to these sort of 25 to 40-year-olds. Next one is looking at housing affordability, particularly for our basic skilled workers. Next one is new hire characteristics from the employer survey. Next one is demand for labor by different business sectors. And one thing I just want to mention here If you look kind of in the middle, there is manufacturing. And manufacturing actually is projected to decline in net new jobs. However, the replacement is needing like 2,000 replacement workers a year because we have a lot of older workers in manufacturing, and we do have successful manufacturing in our seven-county region. So this kind of information is very interesting as we think about what's needed. We shouldn't just think, you know, a certain sector is dying because it's still got activity and still needs replacement workers. Excuse me. Next one shows us labor shortages by occupation, and finally the next data one is labor surpluses by occupation. It's quite a bit of other data, but that gives you a flavor of what's in there. As far as the next slide is just a summary of findings. I've compressed this so much I hardly need to say it again, but some of the key factors, again, were the shortages of basic skilled workers, insufficient opportunity for medium and high-skilled workers, which throws them into underemployment situations. Our economy does have moderate growth and is likely to keep having moderate growth. Next slide. Pretty much the same stuff, that we'll have growth and issues are going to be around underemployment and basic skills. So I think I've said that three times. And now I want to very quickly just introduce you to another part of the product that we got from this from our consultant, which is called JobsEQ. And I will be giving you websites where you could go and actually sign up for this and go try it and look and see what's there. Although what's available on the web is a little bit less detailed than what we'll have at the One Stop Center and at TCAD. We have ongoing data updates. We will have analytical tools that will help employment services and economic development policy decisions. That's kind of the splashboard. You can click ahead to the next one. It just shows some of the analytical tools. This is showing somebody with a certain occupation, what other occupations are near to them for their skill sets, which ones maybe pay more, which ones pay less, which ones are in sectors that are growing, which ones are in sectors that are dying. So there's some really neat analytics inside of this. And this one just shows a concentration. If you're looking to hire somebody in a certain field, where would you find a machinist? Well, there's a lot of them maybe up in the Rochester area, not very many over in Greene County, so where do you want to advertise, that kind of thing. And finally, the websites. I actually have splash pages on your handout, but there are the web addresses, and you have those in your handout. Again, the full report and the JobsEQ link are on both of our websites. You can go there and sign up for JobsEQ if you want to try it. And now I'm going to hand this over very quickly to Julia Maddock to let us know what's coming up in our planning process.
Thank you, Martha.
As we move forward, since Shimura completed the report in April, the next step in the strategy was creation of a steering committee to begin to look at the workforce strategy and how do we engage key stakeholders. So we created a steering committee. The steering committee is made up of folks in education, as well as TC3 and Cornell University. We have a county legislator, our own Martha Robertson. We have key employers with Cayuga Medical Center, Advion, and the Tompkins Trust Company, as well as Patricia Carey from the Department of Social Services. That's our steering committee as we move forward in designing our workforce strategy. The first step in the strategy is really talking about stakeholder engagement. As we move forward with the strategy, the first key stakeholder we're really engaging is the Workforce Investment Board itself. I think many of you know the members of the Workforce Investment Board. It's a private sector-led board with 51% employers, and we have 18 employers on the board. And then we have many additional agencies and partners that are involved in the board, and they were the first stakeholders that we began to talk to. The last two Workforce Investment Board meetings have been geared toward looking at doing a strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats analysis, both internally and externally. And we're beginning to look at strategic direction for the board and then beginning to provide input to the workforce strategy. We've had some great board meetings in the last couple of months with people very enthusiastic and engaged in what's going on at the board level. Next, in terms of stakeholder engagement, early on we've already identified a really crucial stakeholder that we need to engage is we need to create a dialogue with our K-12 system. I think we have a great dialogue with our community college, but we need to create a dialogue with our K-12 system. There are some great things that are going on, but we know that we need to dialogue around We need to dialogue with our K through 12 system to begin to create, to give youth information on the career opportunities that are here locally. As we, this ties back to our strategy in that the strategy really identifies a need for basic skill, entry-level workers at both the basic skill level as well as a more complex skill level. And so we need to really work with our K through 12 system and dialogue to create to explain to young people the opportunities that are available locally. We need to do a better job locally of retaining some of the young people, both at the K through 12 level as well as our college systems. The steering committee's next step in the process is we've had several meetings to talk about how to engage additional key stakeholders, such as additional employers, agencies, and community leadership. As far as the workforce strategy is concerned, we are aiming to complete the workforce strategy by the end of 2008. That is our goal. And begin to work with our stakeholders to adopt that strategy and get everyone on board with moving forward with a comprehensive strategy. In conclusion, I want to say thank you and ask if there are any questions.
Thank you, Julia. Nathan.
What was the most surprising finding in the study?
I would say the depth of the mismatch, of the depth of the underemployment here in relationship to nationally, when we began to look at those numbers. I think anecdotally people always say Ithaca has an underemployment issue, but when we really looked at our issue in relationship to nationally and the complete skills mismatch that we have based on the underemployment. And the other is the 35 to 44 demographic and the fact that we are losing that demographic faster than the national average, and that is your key wage-earning years, your key tax-paying years, as well as your key child-bearing years, and that really affects a lot of our community. I would say that would be the areas.
Mike Sigler.
I just have two questions. What you just said about underemployment was interesting because do you see a disconnect with the next slide, which was survey key findings, and about 4 in 10 employers? I mean, they view the quality of the workforce as inadequate, so I'm having trouble reconciling those two things. One group is saying it's underemployed, and the other group is saying, well, you're not qualified.
I don't know if you want
to. I think a lot of this has to do with the skills mismatch, and one of the things that I think I really appreciate from the study is trying to get a better handle on all these different kind of threads that sound kind of like they're contradictory, which is what you're pointing out, mm-hmm. but that we have really just a shortage of people who are interested in able to fill sort of basic skill entry-level jobs. We have a lot of people who have higher-level skills who are sometimes taking those jobs, but even with that, there's a shortage, unlike a lot of maybe parts of the country where there's more people who are sort of looking for work who don't have a lot of skills. We have people here who have a lot of skills. We have an incredibly high education level, and a lot of those folks don't want to take the entry-level or base-level jobs, so those jobs go wanting, and a lot of people are in community to take some of those jobs, but you know, it's only so far you're going to drive for those. As far as the people who are underemployed, what we could find from this data is that a lot of them are concentrated in the education-type occupations, whereas the jobs that are wanting are in basic health service type jobs, basic retail, food service, a lot of those kind of things. And the folks who are here who are underemployed have education, librarian, teacher type jobs. So it's just a very different mix of people. We're kind of, you know, it's like they're going in totally different directions in different places. And the study helps us start to comb through that and figure out why some of those contradictions exist.
I mean, I also saw that we're losing manufacturing jobs. Are we classifying manufacturing jobs the same way as we did? I mean, these aren't obviously like Kennedy Valve jobs. These are, we've been adding more high-tech manufacturing, so I'm wondering, has that offset at all?
A lot of the study actually looks at occupations. So it's manufacturing occupations, so production workers. Actually, this part may be also just by the sector, but we're losing a very small amount of manufacturing jobs compared to a lot of other places, and I think it's because we do have conventional products being made now in a much more high-tech way, and then we do have new high-tech producers who are making new nano products or, you know, things that we never thought of 10 or 15 years ago. So manufacturing, yes, the definition of manufacturing nationally and, of course, here locally has changed a lot. Okay. But it is basically about what you're producing, a thing that you sell,
okay,
whatever that thing is.
And four hands up. Frank, then Martha, then Kathy, then Carol.
Thanks, Mike. A couple of years ago, we embarked on a project with the Ithaca school system. Some of you may remember that. This board contributed $2,500 to it, and Senator Kuhl contributed $150,000 to it. It was a 2 to 4 year project, and we were interested in creating an academy at the old Danby School. Some of you may remember that. Several programs came out of it, and it filled a niche of part of a small part of what you're describing. The individuals that were coming out of high school that were not college bound, but were filling maybe plumbers, electricians, agricultural workers, environmental workers, landscapers, and whatnot. And that program is still going on. Part of it resulted in the New Visions program through the high school, and part of it was health care, and also there was a component for pre-veterinary medicine. And those programs still exist at BOCES. I don't know if you've had a chance to review that report, but it may be interesting to incorporate it into this study, because there is a... You hit it on the head. I mean, we had a steering committee that Judy Pastel pulled together, and we worked together for this 2 to 4 year period, and it's still happening, because we felt the same thing that your study is beginning to identify, that there's a not so much the underemployment, but the there's a gap in what we need in this community. Somewhere in this office, a copy of that study exists. And if you haven't laid your hands on it, I can see that you get a copy, because it would be good to... I wanted to ask you a question about the steering committee. Understand what's the option for expanding that steering committee?
I mean, we're certainly willing to discuss the steering committee and expansion. We feel like we've done a good job of getting a broad representation. We have Dr. O'Donnell from TST BOCES on the steering committee, Carl from TC3, as well as an individual from Cornell University, both as a major employer as well as an educational institution. So we feel like we've addressed the education sector. We've got some major employers, as well as agency and government representation. But certainly we're willing to look at it and consider additional members. The steering committee has taken a step back. We've had several meetings, and we're taking a step back to really spend a lot of time thinking through what's the best way to engage stakeholders. Initially, we were talking about maybe like what Martha calls a come one, come all, everybody come and provide comment, and now we're backing up a little bit and talking about maybe stakeholder engagement in specific on specific topics, or stakeholder engagement in specific areas. To make sure that we're hitting on everyone and everyone has an opportunity to provide feedback.
One of the key people that were involved was Charles Grumman, who was associated with BOCES at that time. And I'll speak to Dr. O'Donnell, because I think that there may be they may have the reports, because that was our home base, if you will, up there. I'll see that you get copies of that.
You know, Frank, I also think that Tony DeLucci, we've been pretty involved with Tony DeLucci at TST BOCES, and I think he may be a contact. He worked under Charlie Grumman at that time, and
I think
Tony would also have access to that information.
Okay. Thank you.
Martha.
Thank you. I just want to note one of the early slides, growth is moderate, about 0.8% per year. mean, that compared to other places in upstate New York, that's a home run. Right?
Well, way ahead.
Way ahead.
In upstate New York, yeah.
Okay. And when you, all these findings, you're aggregating all seven counties in this region, right?
In the regional findings, there's also...
The study often breaks it out by Tompkins County, the region, the state, the nation. So it's in many of the tables, et cetera, it's broken out that way.
I'm just sort of looking at the early slides here where you took regional findings. So that when the number here of replacements annually of 30,428, that's seven counties, right?
That's seven counties, correct.
Because I thought 30,000 replacements a year, then that sounds like 100% turnover or something.
Yeah.
So if it's just
a whole 150,000 or so jobs in the region.
Okay, so in a sense, when people say, well, there are no jobs in this region, that's maybe really not a true statement.
I really think that's one of our big issues. Our young people don't consider, unfortunately, don't necessarily consider. I mean, they hear the bad news and don't necessarily consider the career opportunities that are here locally. And I think that's really going to be, an important part of moving forward with the workforce strategy is really helping young people to identify that there are career opportunities here, there are good-paying jobs in the region, that there's a reason to stay here. Thank you.
One of my jobs is to move us along towards our resolutions. I have Kathy next.
Thank you. Very valuable report. Since I think economic development, workforce is a very important part of economic development, I think the study is really valuable. I'll spend some time on the web looking at it. The part that piqued my interest that I wanted to ask you about has to do with the key findings economic forecast. It talks about the 1,400 net new jobs annually. I don't see construction in there, and yet it was identified in the survey, specifically skilled trade. Guess what? That's what I'm interested in. But it's not, or at least I don't know where in these four categories it would be.
Those four categories were just examples. We have it in the, if you get in the full report, it lists many occupations. I mean, it lists lots and lots of occupations. I just put those in to show you sort of the top three and the bottom one as a sense of where some of the concentrations were.
You just did this to pique our interest, so we
exactly, and then
this
you're going to look at the whole report or come talk to me. Or
really valuable report.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Pam?
Yes, I know that Tompkins County has always had the lowest or among the lowest unemployment rates in New York State over a long period of time, and that has always masked the underemployment problem that we have. And so it's not a new problem, it's an old problem. But I think that what has happened is that it seems that at least there was a time at Cornell, and they're being the largest employer in the county, I guess that's why I picked them. But hiring people on a contract basis or part-time basis was a way for employers to save money. And anyway, I guess that what I'm seeing is that with all of these pieces in here, the highly skilled underemployment, that is there any discussion that will be taking place about this problem? I mean, in terms of encouraging employers to hire people on a full-time basis. If people are leaving here during their prime of working years, it may be because they aren't be able to find the full-time work. That even though we have a low unemployment rate, that this may be a reason because of the way that jobs are being structured by employers. So my question to you is there anywhere in here a discussion that will take place with employers about this issue?
As we finish up the workforce strategy, that may certainly be an area that's identified. I think there's ongoing efforts to assist employers with recruitment and retention, and that may be that is a strategy related to it. I will tell you that whether you're talking about temporary agencies or whether you're talking about temporary workers or full-time permanent jobs across the board. Employers are really struggling to get the workforce that they need. I mean, it is a continuing issue with positions staying open for long periods of time. And in addition, working with temporary agencies, the temporary agencies are having the same issues that employers have. Employers are just passing on, attempting to get that workforce through temporary agencies, but certainly that may be, you know, working with employers for strategies around recruitment and retention beyond what we're already doing. There are definitely efforts going on. Maybe something that, in terms of the strategy, we decide we really want to focus on.
Very briefly, Carol, then Nathan.
Yeah, I was just wondering if you looked at or found anything significant in terms of diversity, whether there were any surprises and or whether any of the efforts that we've made seem to be making any difference in achieving greater diversity at various levels of the workforce.
The only area where we did look at diversity, there's a question on the employer survey about their current, their most recent hires was one of the main set of questions were based on who are their most recent hires, and one of the questions was, not sure if we looked at gender on that, but we did look at racial diversity, and I think we also looked at age on that. So we did look at some of the diversity factors as who are you employing now, who's kind of coming in, you know, today. That was in October when we did the question. So we did get some sense from that. And we also asked within that context, were they local or did they come from somewhere outside of our region? So we get a sense of who are the people sort of at the margin looking for work.
And Nathan.
This is going to sound like a joke, but it's only partially meant to be. Are people with PhDs considered high-skilled people?
Yes. We actually, we jammed things down to three skill groups, which was basic skills, medium skills, and high skill. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there's about 10 definitions that got jammed into those three to make it a little more kind of bite-sized. Yeah. But yes, higher education, anything above a BA, and I think even a BA is considered high skill.
Okay, because I have a lot.
Whereas medium
like
skill
PhDs
is the 2 year, and that's your own private opinion, I guess.
Yeah.
But there are national standards on how to identify skill levels and sort of capabilities.
Well, thank you very much, Martha and Julia, and people know where to go if they want more information.
Thank you again for having us. I'm going to leave a stack of the report summaries. I guess maybe I'll just leave them in the board office rather than passing right now for you. Thank you.
We have five different items that are clamoring to get moved up. I will skip my chair's report, and there's no appointments. I will wait on county administrator, et cetera, wait on consent agenda. Why don't we actually take up TC3, which is the Budget and Capital Committee. There's two items on consent and one on the regular agenda.
Let's just do consent.
Why don't we do consent?
All right, let's do the whole vlog. All right. Let's jump to the consent agenda. These are items which are non-controversial and hopefully can pass in a single motion. Under appointments for Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Patricia Carey and Larry Roberts. And then under Government Operations Committee, Resolution A. This is the revised version. This is requesting Joint Subcommittee of the Ithaca Area Wastewater Treatment Facility to take over financial billing of the septic disposal at the Ithaca Area Wastewater Treatment Plant from Tompkins County. Resolution B, authorizing agreements for Phase 2 and 3 for Health Benefits Consortium. Consultant, this is also revised. On to Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee. Resolution C, authorization of contract between Tompkins County Office for Employment and Training of Central New York and Health Education Center and Budget Adjustment. Resolution D, authorization of contract between Tompkins County Workforce Investment Board and the Tompkins County Chamber of Commerce and Budget Adjustment. Resolution E, designation of Tourism Promotion Agency for State Fiscal Year 2008-2009. Resolution F, budget adjustments, various departments. Resolution G, authorization to rescind Resolution 115 of 2007, transfer of the Tompkins County Economic Development Revolving Loan Fund to Tompkins County Area Development. Resolution H.
Whoa, off.
off.
I may have wanted to take G off, but it's too late.
Okay. And resolution I, authorizing dissolution of the Tompkins County Economic Development Revolving Loan Fund.
Oh, off.
Off, okay. Under Budget and Capital Committee, resolution J, approval.
Off.
Off, okay. And resolution K.
Off.
Okay. And the Health and Human Services Committee, resolution L, authorization to submit certificate of need application to add medical social services to operating certificates, health department. Who'd like to move the consent agenda? Will Burbank moves it. Frank Proto seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. So we will still move to Budget and Capital Committee TC3 resolution specifically. Nathan.
Oh, sorry. all right. I have Resolution J, approval of Tompkins Corlin Community College Professional Administrators Association Agreement, the years 2008 and 2013, and I so move.
Is there a second? Pam McAsey. Is there discussion? Frank Proto.
Mr. Chairman, the reason I ask that these be pulled, J and K, is just to understand what the pieces of the proposals are. But I need to ask a procedural question. Are they such that they should be done in executive session, or can they be discussed in open session?
They would have to be discussed in executive session.
Okay. Do you need a motion to move into executive session? Because I'd like to hear some details about both of them.
You'd have to move that?
I'd like to move that we go into executive session to discuss agreements, contracts with regard to TC3.
Is there a second? Dooley Kiefer? All in favor of moving into executive session for the purpose of the contract negotiations? Are there any opposed? Okay, we'll take a few minutes to shut the cameras down. We'll move into executive session. Are we back? Okay, we're back in open session. Nathan, would you like to move? Oh. Okay, Nathan has already moved, and we have a second for Resolution J. Is there further discussion? Are we prepared to vote?
Yes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous for Resolution J. Nathan, would like to move Resolution K?
Yes, I'd like to move Resolution K, approval of Tompkins Corlin Community College Faculty Association Agreement for the years 2008 to 2013.
And seconded by Mike Hedery. Is there a discussion? Let's wait a minute till I think Kathy's coming back in the room. Maybe not. Okay, we're going to proceed. If there's no further discussion, ready to vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. And
should I be moving Resolution O?
Let's do Resolution O, yes.
Okay. I'd like to move Resolution O, adoption of 2008-2009 operating budget, Tompkins Corlin Community College, and I so move.
Thank you. Seconded by Mike Hattery. Is there discussion? Martha, then Dooley.
I apologize. Do we have a revised that would have include the percentage increase?
No, I don't think we have a revised.
We don't have a revised at all.
Yeah, there is a revised, but I don't think it actually has that information. No,
I'd like to add that in if I could get clarity on what that is. We have a revised. Oh.
Do we not?
5%, and is it in the first resolve?
I don't see a revised.
Yeah, sorry, it's not in here. We can amend that then.
Okay, so in the first resolve,
Julie?
I had done a revised resolution that had whereas, Martha, which I was going to move, which says whereas TC3 asked for and has justified a 6% increase in its operating budget, Tompkins County is authorizing a 5% increase. And that's what I was going to pass out, but I thought harder about it, and so maybe this is what you thought you were going to see. And rather than accept the 5%, which is what is reflected in the dollar amounts in the Budget Committee's resolution, I would like to amend this to change the numbers to be 6%, on the grounds that the college actually asked for and did a good job of justifying 6%. And what I finally got clear in my own head is that the difference between 5% and 6% in dollars for Tompkins County, which pays 62% of it, is just under $25,000, which is not very much of a change. It's $24,392. And I have the actual figures to substitute.
We have a motion to change 5% to 6% with the actual dollars. Is there a second? To Greg Stevenson. The discussion on the amendment. Frank Proto.
The resolution O that I'm looking at, can you tell me where you're inserting
in the first resolve? I believe Dooley would be changing the number in the budget. Do you have the exact number of Dooley?
32,358,578.
And that will
say that again.
32,358,578.
And you will be, and you've moved to insert the percentage after that?
The whereas hasn't been moved
yet. No, I would move a whereas that says, whereas CC3 has asked for and has justified a 6% increase in its operating budget.
Okay.
Let's say resolved, we would have these numbers.
Thank you.
But it would have to no longer say probably on
well, let's the take these in steps.
Budget and Capital Committee.
Discussion on the amendment of the number. Mike Hattery.
Just a point of procedure, I'm sure this will be friendly to TC3, but our compatriots over in Cortland County will have to back off and redo their resolutions as well.
I took the weekend time to contact some of those legislators, the chair of the legislature, the chair of the budget committee, and they both fully support the 6%.
I really wanted 6%. They're going to redo it, that's all.
Just as a quick procedural point, I don't think this is friendly to Mike and Nathan as mover and seconder.
No, okay. It's not friendly.
All right, so we're debating the amendment. Further deliberations. Martha.
Well, there are two numbers in that resolve, so
the other
just
number, I can give you the other number. It's
4170327. Carol Chong.
So just I want to clarify, so that our contribution would go from 4130985 to 4170327?
No, those are the operating budget numbers. We pay a percentage of those. We pay 62%. And so our share in one version is... I don't have those numbers in front of me.
If you'd like the increase, your share of the increase at 5% is $121,963. And as was mentioned, that would go up by approximately, I don't have the exact number here, but approximately $25,000.
It goes up $24,392.
Okay, thank you. So that would mean your total increase would be approximately $145,000. 146,000
instead of 121,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, almost 122.
And I just also like to point out that with very little discussion, it seemed like Cortland County, during our joint meeting, supported the 6%.
Okay, you have speakers Nathan and then Kathy.
Yeah, I think that we should stick with the 5% number. I think that there's something to be that it looks. I mean, we're facing a challenging budget year, and to approve a increase to TC3's budget by double what we were that we have put on ourselves for the whole county, I think just seems too much. Already 5% is a lot, and so I think we should stick to that 5%. I understand it's only a $25,000 difference, but if you add $25,000 here and there, eventually it becomes real money. So.
Kathy Lou Herrera.
I agree with Nathan. I was willing to support the 5% even though it's more than the guidelines that we had set for our own departments and agencies for reasons that education is so important, and particularly the education that takes place at TC3. I can't in good conscience go to 6 this year.
I'd like to move towards a vote on the amendment. I have Martha next.
Well, I would agree with Kathy and Nathan. I'm even... puzzled at how the folks who voted for a 3% levy increase for Tompkins County can support a 5% increase for TC3. I didn't vote for the 3% levy increase this year, so I get to, you know, remind everybody else who did.
Thanks.
So I'll support the 5%, but, you know, every increase over here means if we're going to stay at our 3% target, means more of a hit somewhere else.
Leslie, then Jim.
As always, and just by procedure, the TC3 budget comes to us before we do our full budget reviews, and without having sort of the full picture of what that will look like, I don't feel comfortable. I'm not comfortable with 5%, but I certainly don't want to go beyond that at this point, since, you know, there's been some movement already approved 5%. I'm more than happy to stick to that.
Jim Dennis.
I'm supporting the 6, and I do it for a couple of reasons. Number one, we just had a 35-minute program talking about underemployment and the kind of things that we don't have in Tompkins County. And this organization, I think, is the lead organization for educating young people coming out of high school and putting them in those jobs that, or at least beginning to train them for those jobs that we're trying to fill. I think the other thing for me is all departments are not equal. All things are not equal. We're giving a certain percentage to this organization. You have to be able to defend a 6% for one and a 3% for another. I think that's why we're here. And it's very easy to defend a 6% for this organization, I think.
I'd like to move to a vote. I see a quick hand from Carol and a very quick hand from Dooley.
Jim said it.
Okay.
Moving to the future, this will create the match between the skills that we need and the skills that will move us forward to a larger tax base in the future.
And Dooley.
And it's always dangerous to fall into the trap of percentages. It's really the actual dollars that matter. And $25,000 is really not much in our budget at all. And it helps us stop falling further behind in the share of the TC3 budget that we actually support.
Motion on the floor is to increase that number by 24,392. Are we ready to vote? Martha.
I've been persuaded. I'll vote for the 6%.
Are we ready to vote?
Yeah. Good job.
You know,
what are we voting on, the 6?
6%. Leslie.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. It always troubles me when I hear $25,000 is not a whole lot in our budget. And you're right, dude, it may not be. But to a lot of our departments who we haven't had a chance to look at just yet, that is a lot of money. That could be a person's job.
Carl, a quick word.
I'd just like to make a comment because I, first of all, I appreciate this debate. I'm leaving here today to go to a meeting of our statewide presidents, and I'll guarantee you none of my colleagues are hearing debates from their sponsors about how to increase their share. So I really do appreciate that gesture. But it strikes me that many of you weren't at the previous meeting that we had last month to hear part of the case for the increase, whether it's 5 or 6%. Let me just, if I could, just take a moment to kind of hit three of the, salient points. One is that we have seen a real significant increase in the number of students from the local high school districts coming to the community colleges, 64 this past fall compared to the previous fall. If you assume the majority of those students would have probably attended another community college if they hadn't been attending ours, that's $183,000 in savings to chargeback revenues that you would be sending someplace else. Now, that's collected between the two sponsors. And in actuality, that 64 was literally 32 with each county. So half of that money is real dollar, hard dollar savings in your budget. And I think that, you know, all we're doing is looking at kind of offsetting that to some extent. Secondly, we're all familiar with the poverty series that the Ithaca Journal recently ran. And I'm sure you noted that all of the people that were highlighted there, as well as a couple of the employees, were all graduates of our program. Those efforts and others that are underway that I won't expand on right now truly take folks that with the education we provide off of public service, which translates to real hard dollar savings in the county budget. And I think the third point I would make just briefly is that I shared this information before as well, but in the last 10 years, the productivity, if you will, of our employees has increased by 35%. In other words, the ratio of full-time equivalent staff to full-time equivalent students has improved by 35%. We're really, I think, employing technology and doing all the kinds of things to really deploy our human resources as efficiently as possible to serve our community. So I could probably go on. I know time is of the essence here for you, but I just wanted to kind of get those points out on the table as part of your consideration, whether it's 6 or 5, whichever way you decide to vote.
I'm going to weigh in before we have a final vote. Later on this evening, we have a vote for what the targets are for all our departments. This vote will be toward the end of some deliberations that our county administrator has been having with every department, practically, about where they can find funds, where they might be able to give back target funds, where they may be able to give back rollover funds. Every single department, I'm sure, can do a case that we've all heard from Tompkins County Community College. Thomas Corton Community College. I will not be supporting the 6%. I believe we have got to find this slight difference in their budget. We've had conversations with Carl and the administration, and they have been able to find this $25,000 without necessarily having a direct impact on program, and that's why I'm not supporting this increase. So further discussion before we vote. All in favor of the... Pardon?
Roll call
vote on the amendment to increase $24,392 in this resolution O.
Mr. Shinagawa?
No.
Mr. Sigler?
No.
Mr. Stevenson?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Cha?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. Hattery?
No.
Ms. Herrera?
No.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Ms. McAsee?
No.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
No.
Mr. Proto?
No.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Kaplinkalair?
No.
Six ayes, eight noes.
Back to the main resolution, which is 5%. Do we have a discussion? Kathy Lou Herrera.
I want to disclose right now or tell people that I've been a student at TC3, and I think it's a remarkable institution. I think it's a real anchor and a foundation for not just the working class in this community. It's a quality school that a lot of people transfer into Cornell from. I think that it's worthy of our support. That was my reason for raising the amount to 5% from the 3 that had originally been proposed. I want to point out that the reason that I didn't go for 6 is because we got to look ahead, and that a lot of times this is cumulative. One of the things that Carl Haynes talked to us about in the future that we need to address when maybe we're not under such pressure is the fact that, proportionately speaking, our contributions to TC3 have not increased on par with others, which was another reason for going up to 5% in proportion to other years. So I think 5%, although it's not as good as we'd like to be able to do, I think it's something that we can do. I know that it's a tough decision, but that's why I decided to support the 5%. And I apologize that I wasn't willing and didn't feel that the county would be able to go to 6.
Further discussion? Is everyone ready to vote? All in favor of Resolution O as originally proposed?
Aye.
And are there any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. Thank you, Carl.
Thank you very much for your support.
Move forward to, Public Safety Committee. Greg Stevenson. This is the revised Resolution Q.
I'd like to ask Vice Chair Jim Dennis to introduce that resolution, if I could.
Thank you. It's Resolution Q, appropriation from contingent fund, an increase in hours for transition workforce specialist position, Department of Probation, Community Justice, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Mike Hattery. Is there discussion? Frank Proto.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of questions. When is this supposed to start, if it passes? When is it supposed to end? Are we picking it up for the rest of this year? And when do we get a report on the effectiveness of this program? And fourth, are we going to make up shortfalls whenever the state pulls out like this?
That's 5.
but who's counting?
Jim, do you want to mention that this as modified in budget capital?
Right. Let me add a further resolve further that this funding is an appropriation for 2008 and is not assumed as funding for 2009. And if that, I would like to add that to the resolution somewhere.
That will be added if it's friendly to Mike, which I think it is. So it's now added. Further discussion?
Now, your questions, Frank? What was number one?
Start immediately?
Yes.
And you've already answered when it ends. It ends at the end of 2008. When do we get a report on the effectiveness of the program?
We've been submitting reports on a regular basis to the public safety. There are other reports available.
We have been summarizing our regular activity, the numbers, the attachment to the workforce, how many employees have been impacted by that, and so on. They're all available at the CJC Center. I'd be happy to forward those to you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Yep. Ready to vote on Resolution Q as revised. Kathy Lucerer.
I just wanted a clarification. At the committee, it was clarified for me that some of this money is already target. Because what some of us had questions about was how much of this is going to go on into 2009. Well, some of it will because it's already in target. So I'd just like that clarified before the vote.
50% of the position has been longstanding and funded through the probation department for the last 7 years.
That part is target. Martha?
Well, to answer Frank's question about how, you know, we always going to pick up what the state leaves off, I think that's one of the things that we do is evaluate every time that the state drops the ball on us, and the things that save us money in the long run by keeping people out of jail in the future, by helping them become taxpayers and productive citizens, those are the things that are worth the investment that we decide, I hope, to go ahead and fund when the state fails to keep its commitments.
I think we're ready to vote. All in favor? This is a short form.
Roll call, please.
Short form roll call.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Anyone wish to be recorded as a no? Frank Frodo. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. And Greg.
Not me.
I think this gets me in the roll call.
We didn't do a full roll call. We did a short form roll call. Call two names and others. Excuse me? Okay. We move on to Health and Human Services Committee. Frank Proto, Resolution R as revised. And we'll come back to these committees for their committee reports later on.
Resolution R is authorization to pay vacation time in excess of the maximum for the Health Department. And I'd like to move that. There's a revised one in your red folders.
Is there a second? Nathan Shinagawa?
The revision is to the dollar amounts, if you'll notice.
Is there a discussion? This is revised. Carol Chalk.
Yeah, I just want to explain. I'm going to change my vote from committee. After hearing the orientation from our personnel department about how gaining a better understanding of how the county approaches sick time, merit, incentives. I just don't think we have enough merit incentives built into the system, and this is a way to achieve that for somebody who's put in extra. And so I realize it's an exception and would like to support it now.
Kathy Lou Cervera.
In reading the minutes of the meeting, it became clear that at a previous meeting, David Chase had expressed some concern about this exception, particularly because of situations that Carol actually, I think, maybe inadvertently alluded to. So I want to clarify that I was able to find out from Nathan and Chair Kaplinka-Lair that there was communication with David Chase agreeing with that this was an exception and that there have been assurances that this employee will not encounter the same dilemma again. So for the record, I just wanted to say that those assurances have been delivered. I know it's tough, and we want to see that this employee gets their pay.
Is Jim Dennis.
I was asked by the Budget Committee to contact David, and did so through Anita, and saw the same emails back and forth that Kathy speaks of.
I think we're ready to vote. This is the revised version of Resolution R. All in favor?
Aye.
Are there any opposed? That looks like it's unanimous.
Thank you.
I think the only other item that someone might be waiting for is the carbon tax.
No, the postponed item.
Well, I don't see anyone here for that.
They might be out in the hall.
For the carbon tax, we have people, but not for the ag district, right?
Yeah, there were people here for the ag district.
Well, I don't see them anymore.
Well, these three are here now.
Okay, so let's... I'll ask Carol if she wants to move her member filed resolution.
Yes, I would like to move the revised version that is in your folders with a further revision to the title, if I can do that. The title, corrected title, would read Expressing Support for Federal, I'd add, federal action to reduce carbon emissions through the mechanism of a carbon tax.
Okay, and this is the revised. And who would like to second? Leslin seconds.
It's a lot more clear now.
With that change in title, is there discussion? Carol.
Wait, are we having a discussion on the change in the title?
No. That's been moved.
Oh.
With the revised... You have the revised...
The whole resolution.
Yes.
The whole thing
yes.
at once,
okay.
the
whole
rather than in pieces.
Revised resolution has been moved with the revised title. It's now what we're voting on. Carol Chaw.
Okay. I submitted this as member filed after week. We didn't have a full component of the PDEQ. I am the liaison to the EMC. And I want to thank the many. There was a lot of discussion over the last 4 months about the notion of Tompkins County weighing in on this, on the need for federal action related to carbon emissions. As a community, the city of Ithaca has weighed in, the town of Ithaca has weighed in. This is something that communities across the nation are weighing in to really the usefulness of this is to let our federal representatives know that there is sentiment out here, people, concerned citizens thinking about that. And we had 4 months of significant presentation on the EMC from scientists, from economists, from environmentalists, from concerned citizens, and I want to thank them all. It's a complex issue. We don't ultimately get to decide it on this level. So the important thing to me is that we agree that we're passing up a resolution that we agree that there is a problem and that we'd like our voice to be counted as they weigh the piles of mail that they get from the various constituencies. This resolution recognizes all the fine work and the divergence of opinion that there is about how to achieve the reduction in emissions so that we can start as a nation to deal with the pollution that we're dealing with. Yet this is an educated community, and so there are strong preferences and a desire to be more specific in the whys and wherefores of the details of whichever stance we might take. After much debate, when reasonable environmentalists, scientists, citizens, economists seem to still not coalesce around one method that's under federal discussion or another, the carbon tax versus the cap and trade, which also can be modified to think of as cap and auction, as Dooley has helped us do here. I'm suggesting that this new strengthened language that makes it clear that what we are doing is weighing in, that we do have a strong preference that a tax would be a better mechanism, but that there is federal discussion and only, which were in the event that the federal level cannot agree to levy a tax, that we would still like to see something done. So we're this resolution reflects the notion that that we would then, in the event that, that they don't go for a tax, we'd still like to do, see them do something, and then spelling out the specifics of the conditions that we would like to see in either method. I will acknowledge great help from Dooley Kiefer in crafting this resolution and the revisions. She has been very involved, and she is impeccable in specifying many of the concerns that have been expressed by many constituents in the community. And so I urge that we pass this in order to weigh in. I so move. Or I did
already. I already moved and seconded. I would like to warn us that we will not be revisiting the entire debate that EMC went through over 4 months.
Yes.
Is there anyone who would like to discuss this before we move to a vote? Greg.
I'll be brief. I appreciate the work that's gone into this, but I've heard, I'll not be supporting this. I've heard a few things that really kind of sum this up in a nutshell for me. This is pretty complicated stuff. I mean, Carol just alluded to that. Our federal representatives certainly have more resources to learn about and understand this kind of legislation. I would have liked to have seen this go to a full committee, not just come to the floor after one try at a committee. None of my constituents have been calling me asking for any new taxes. To kind of sum up the whole thing, I heard a lot of privilege of the floor. The word scheme kept coming up, and I don't, that kind of sticks in my mind. There's so much that I don't know about this. I can't imagine many of my constituents supporting something like this. Hopefully, if I'm wrong about that, they'll call me tomorrow. But otherwise, I can't support this.
Kathy Lou Cervera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Greg that this is complex, and I was grateful that I was contacted by some members of the public who helped explain it in ways that I could understand a little bit better. And at first, I couldn't figure out, like, what was the difference and why should I even care, really. And after some patience and they explained things to me, I come to understand that this actually is a tax that I would support. And y'all know me, that there's not a whole lot of them. But the carbon tax part I would support. I'm not fond of the cap and trade or the cap and auction. And for that reason, I'm trying to be brief. I would like to move either an amendment, I guess, to remove the second resolved altogether, because what that does basically is say that we would take a cap and auction system. And I think it's not as good, and everybody says it's not as good, so if we're going to give them advice, why not give them advice that we really mean and go ahead on and say this is the one we think we like, because it's already complex enough without adding all this other stuff. So that's my motion, to remove the second resolved entirely, and I sure hope I can get a second.
Is there a second? Martha seconds. Is there discussion on the amendment to remove second resolved? Dooley Kiefer, then Martha.
Well, would it ease your thinking about this if the word only were inserted in the second resolved?
Well, I'll tell you what my fallback position is, inserting the word only and then instead of next best, less favorable. But that's only if this doesn't pass. Might as well cut to the chase, you know.
Okay, are we ready to vote on the amendment to remove the entire second resolve? All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Got those? And opposed to removing that resolved. 1, 2, 3, 4 are opposed, I believe. That passes something to 4. Probably 10 to 4. Okay. With that resolved out, we're back to the regular debate. Martha.
I think, thanks, Kathy, I think this is stronger, clearer, cleaner, and says what I think we really should be saying. I've heard from, first off, the PD committee had a very thick packet of material that gave much more detail about the issue, both sides, but mostly in support of the carbon tax as opposed to cap and trade. And everything I've heard and learned about the cap and trade is it just seems really fraught with lots of ways to game the system. And I think the word scheme refers to that, not to the tax. The tax is cleaner, clearer, and I think this is something that we need to lead on. And it's something we need to understand, something we need to be able to explain to our constituents. This is affecting everything that we do, everything our children and grandchildren are going to do, and what their options are. And I think if this government had done something about energy efficiencies and these issues 20 or 30 years ago, when some people started talking about them, then we'd have many more choices right now. Our choices are limited now because of how long we've put this off. In fact, we are already paying significant costs for our failure to do anything about global warming. And those costs are just hidden. And they're in all sorts of, you know, distorted places. So that the price of gas is one. The cost of, as Margaret said before, the cost of disasters around the country, that's another cost that we're already paying. And I think, and if we think that, oh, well, we don't have those disasters in Tompkins County, well, maybe not yet, but every time the federal government bails out another community, we're paying that cost right now. So I hope we can use this as a discussion point. I think it may be hard to defend to people, hard to explain, but it's time that we learn how to defend and explain it.
I have three more people who'd like to speak, and I think we can go to a vote. I have Mike, then Will, then Jim.
I won't take a lot of time. I would say that I generally agree with Greg's sentiments on this, with one exception. He said he would like to see a fuller discussion of this in committee, and I would like us not to clog up the legislative process with weighing in on everybody's federal issues.
Will Burbank.
Yeah, I want to thank Carol for bringing this to us. I certainly understand why you included the cap and trade as an option, because you want something to go forward. I do feel that the option we have chosen is cleaner. Excuse me, the option we have as amendment is cleaner. Essentially, we are dealing with a phenomena that as a society at large, we've been ignoring, which is this horrible pollutant that is getting into our entire system that our grandchildren are going to be paying the price of. What this attempts to do at the very local level is express community concern that hopefully will percolate up to the level where it can actually be addressed. And as we know, our federal government has been in a state of denial about this, and I hope that this community will link with other communities and have a cumulative effect. I strongly support this resolution as amended.
Mike Sigler.
Well, I didn't support this in committee, and I'm not going to support it now. I will say that it's vastly superior to cap and trade, the carbon tax. The main problem I have with this is it does nothing to address the addition of carbon into the atmosphere, except for saying that we're going to punish people who do it. The fact of the matter is the country runs on oil. China runs on oil. India runs on oil. Everybody runs on oil. And I don't foresee that stopping in the next 20 to 30 years. And there's nothing in here about sequestering the carbon. If there are some people who don't believe carbon is a pollutant. There are some people who don't believe that it's a problem. I don't believe that is the sentiment of most of the country. So if we're going to accept the fact, or if we're going to accept that it is a fact, that carbon dioxide going to the atmosphere is a serious problem, you have to sequester it then. And this doesn't address that. Because, I'm sorry, we are not going to kick oil in the next 20 to 30 years. It's not going to happen. China's not going to do it. No one's going to do it. So the other thing in here that I have a large problem with, if you wanted to do this as a tax, we already have a federal tax on gas. Why wouldn't you just take part of that tax and dedicate it toward carbon or carbon sequestering? That would be great. I mean, if you believe that it's a problem, there's an avenue you could go down. But this is basically calling for a new tax with no tax offset. We have no idea what that tax is going to be. And instead of using it to actually address the problem, we're going to use it to relieve the cost burden on low-income persons and underwrite the development of alternative sustainable energy systems. Again, people are doing that already. I feel like we're walking into this 10 years late because I'm reading in the paper this week that we're coming up with insects that are producing oil. So, I don't know. I just feel like if you're going to lead, I think you need to not lead us down the wrong direction, too. I just see this. You can come up with a much easier solution to this problem than what we have here. So,
I believe we're close to voting. Jim Dennis.
A future daughter-in-law of mine spends a great deal of her time in Antarctica and Greenland. She's a PhD in ice, and she just watches things melt when they put cores in the ice. And this is a study, and they've recognized it a long time ago. Krell and Dartmouth have recognized it many years ago. It's not a new problem. We're coming late to it, and I agree with Mike that we are coming late to it. But a carbon tax, for me, means that it'll get passed on to me and all my grandchildren and everyone else at some point down the road. But I think we're doing what Tompkins County does best, the city of Ithaca does best. We're sending a piece of legislation to congressmen and senators and saying, look, please do something about this. This is what we do all the time in Tompkins County. So I'm going to support it for that reason alone, because Lord knows, maybe someone in Washington, 512 people, will wake up and decide to do something about this in the next 10 or 15 years. And it may help a little bit.
All in favor of revised Resolution S with a revised title and the second resolve removed, please raise your hands. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And opposed? That passes 10 to 4. Thank you very much for all those who put work into this. And I don't think anyone's here for the Ag District. Martha, do you want to move Resolution H and I? Ed may be here for that.
Yes. Thank you. Let me get there. Resolution H, authorizing granting of Tompkins County Economic Development Revolving Loan Funds to Tompkins County Area Development Incorporated.
Is there a second? Michael Hattery. Is there discussion? Kathy Lewis Herrera.
I pulled this off because I won't be supporting it. I think it's an example of a way that we're, another example of a way that we're very quietly abdicating our oversight, and I have nothing against Tompkins County Area Development. I just think that as legislators, we need to at least take note when we do this, because there's a real trend to doing it, and that argument is basically why I'll be voting against the other resolutions to save time.
All right, are we ready to vote? All in favor of Resolution H? And opposed? That passes with one opposed. On to Resolution I.
Resolution I, authorizing the dissolution of the Tompkins County Economic Development Revolving Loan Fund Oversight Committee and transferring responsibilities to the Rural Small Business Loan Oversight Committee. So moved.
Second? Frank Proto. And discussion, Kathy Lou Cervera.
Oversight, like I said before.
Any further discussion? Ready to vote on resolution I? All in favor?
Oh, whoops.
And opposed? Any opposed? That passes with one opposed. Thank you. And Martha?
Can I just explain that since Ed, so that Ed can be here and correct me if I'm wrong, that this resolution, the prior one that was passed, so rescinding what we've done before, the confusion, I was asked about that, why do we do all this? It was when they got to the point of, when TCAD and the Planning Department got to the point of really working out the logistics of the first way of doing this transfer, that there were potential legal and accounting issues, especially having to do with repayments of the HUD money, because this is based on HUD loans, and repayment of those loans sort of goes on into the future, gets complicated and potentially illegal when that money would get transferred to TCAD instead. So this was something worked out with TCAD and planning to make sure that guidelines were met.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to return to the top of the agenda, but typically after about 2 hours we take a break. I'm going to try to read the room and see if people want to try to move forward and possibly finish by 8, or do they need a break right now? I see the need to proceed and possibly even gallop. Okay, we're going to move on to report from County Administrator.
Very quickly, I can't talk anymore. It's been a whole long day. The discussions with the departments on 2009 budget continue to go well, and I'm still optimistic that we're going to meet your goal, and thanks to the departments for all of their cooperation. In addition, we had our first interview for the program for the probation director, and we anticipate making a decision by June 20th and bringing that to you for confirmation on July 1st.
Any questions for Steve? On to our county attorney.
I promised last time that I would give an update on the financial disclosure forms at this meeting. All the forms have been filed with the exception of one employee, but who happens to be out this week, so I couldn't contact that employee. All legislators have filed. There do not appear to be any major issues that are raised by the forms. I will say that several years ago we eliminated the requirement that when people report their financial investments, they put in the amount. There are still a few people who are putting in the amount, so you don't have to do that if you don't want to. And that concludes my report, although I would like to request an executive session to discuss a litigation matter at the end of the meeting.
Okay. Any questions for Jonathan? Move on to Finance Director David Squires.
Last Thursday, we had our tax foreclosure auction. We sold 8 properties. It was a successful sale. We had 60 registered bidders. The had gross sales of $321,000. Properties went from a low of $8,000. $8,000 low one property was the a vacant land in Lansing that had a conservation easement on it. And it was sold to Habitat for Humanity. But the highest price was $145,000 for the Country Club property.
Country Club Road.
No, it's a Country Club. It's adjacent to the Ithaca Country Club.
Oh, okay.
So we advertised it as a Country Club property.
Okay.
It sold for $145,000, and that coincidentally was the the low of $8,000 to as much as $145,000. The county netted out $165,000. And in government operations, gives their report. There'll be 2 resolutions authorizing the transfer of the properties based upon the auction and the deeding back to owners who were deemed before the auction.
Those will be added to our agenda in a moment. Any questions for David? Carol?
I just wonder, how does this compare to prior years?
Well, we typically budget about $100,000, and this is the first time we've made our budget estimate in the last 3 years.
To move on, are there any resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda? believe Mike Hattery has two. The GO ones? T and U? It's not on your regular agenda, on the red folder agenda.
Item 16 on the agenda?
I'm going to add resolution T and U. The
okay. I'd like to add resolutions T and U.
is there a second?
We have been hopping around.
Yes, we certainly have. Is there a second to add those to the agenda? Greg Stevenson? All in favor of adding them?
Aye.
Any opposed? Those are now on the agenda. Thank you, Michael. Okay, we're back at the top of the agenda. First committee to report is Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Leslie McBean, Claiborne Chair.
Facilities and Infrastructure met this afternoon just before this legislature meeting, and the item of discussion is in the form of a resolution, which I'd like to move.
You're moving the revised version, right?
The revised version of Resolution M, authorizing acceptance of a Federal Aviation Administration grant to construct runway safety area improvements and obstruction clearance and to construct the parallel taxiway relocation phase 3, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport.
And is there a second? Captain Lou Cervera. Is there discussion? Ready to vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much, Leslie. On to Human Resources Committee. Jim Dennis, Chair.
No report.
Thank you. On to Government Operations Committee. Mike Hattery, Chair.
Can I ask a clarification question before I start?
At any point.
Was resolution, I didn't note this, was either A or B on the consent agenda poll?
No.
Okay, great. Government Operations met since our last meeting, and I have these two resolutions to add that I asked to be added to the agenda. I'll start with, see if I can get them in the right order. T, authorization to execute a quick claim deed, properties redeemed before county auction.
So moved. Is there a second? Leslie McBean, Claiborne, seconds. Is there discussion? All in favor? Are there any opposed? That's unanimous. And you?
And you, authorization to execute quick claim deed sale of foreclosed properties at public auction.
Is there a second? Greg Stevenson. Any discussion? All in favor? Are there any opposed? That's also unanimous with everyone in the room. Any further committee business? All right. Thank you. Move on to Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee. Martha Robertson, Chair.
Thank you. We met on June 10th and heard a report from the workforce, from Julia Maddock and Diane Braddock. And, you know, it was good that we heard what they're a little bit about what they're doing and what the needs are tonight. Seems hours ago. Because I want to let you know that they're facing some significant budget cuts. First cut that they heard about from the state was $19,000, and they said, okay, we can absorb that. And then they learned about an $86,000 cut and another $125,000 cut. And they said, well, we really can't absorb that. So they are working very hard to create additional, to sort of go out and get specific contracts and specific grants with other providers to sort of fill in and make sure that they can keep their staff intact. And so those were a couple of the resolutions on your consent agenda. But that's going to be a really tough hit. Total $230,000 cut to the workforce system. We're going to feel that, folks. Most of our work was on the consent agenda, originally anyway. And I just wanted to also mention that the housing proposals that are working with the staff on the Housing Trust and Affordability Funds. We spoke about that process again, and we'll be looking next month at a memorandum of understanding among Cornell, the city, and Tompkins County about how these funds will be operated. One of the issues we will be discussing further is the governance, is sort of how, who's going to really be providing the policy level guidance for these funds, and that's something that we still need to discuss. So I think those are the main issues. I just wanted to then mention that the next meeting is July 10th, and I need to discuss also the fact that we pulled from June 10th's agenda discussion of the lake monitoring plan. And I know that was awkward for Frank, who was on the radio that morning discussing it. I apologize for that awkwardness, but it was in response to the fact that we weren't going to have a full committee. Also, I felt it was important to wait for the EMC to discuss the lake monitoring plan and to also to postpone our discussion till after the public meeting, which as of that date hadn't even been set yet, but as I mentioned at the beginning of our meeting, that was will be happening on June 25th. But it seemed that, and by the way, I'll be out of town for that, so Pam, take good notes for me. Anyway, so it seemed prudent to pull that discussion till our July 10th meeting, and I trust that we haven't done permanent damage to the lake, I guess, for having postponed that discussion for a month. So.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Martha? On to Budget and Capital Committee. Nathan Shinagawa, Chair.
Yes, Budget and Capital Committee met, when was that? About a week ago. And we discussed a few things. First off, we're going to, as you may have recalled, on May 29th, we had that meeting between legislators and department heads. And out of that came, as I reported in our last meeting, these short-term ideas for budget reductions, long-term ideas, and then criteria for looking at programs as we move forward in the budget process. And we're going to actually review those that document at the end of our budget and capital meeting on Monday, on June 23rd. And we also talked about the resolution that we're going to be seeing here soon, and basically the establishment of the guidelines and fiscal targets for all county budgeting units for the preparation of the 2009 budget, and I'll move that in just a second. But I want to let everybody know that I'd like to have another budget retreat to get an update on the budget, to actually talk about these short-term reductions, and also to actually look at that criteria and develop some sort of consensus, or at least get a feeling from the board on these criteria moving forward. The way I've asked our chairman, Mike Blinkelair, sorry, I've asked our chairman if we could possibly cancel or have a quick meeting on August 5th. That's our usually scheduled legislature meeting. If the budget is light, I was hoping that instead of having a legislature meeting, we can cancel that and have this quick budget retreat. Our chairman is going to be putting together, has put together a memo, and we'll be sending it out to department heads, I believe, basically asking if this is going to present any problems with those departments, and asking if it will inconvenience them. But if it doesn't, and if it doesn't inconvenience any of you, I would like to take that time to have this additional budget retreat. And because once we have this retreat, it's only going to be another month until we start getting into our expanded budget and capital committee meetings.
Thank you. Any questions for Nathan? Frank Proto.
Nathan, while it may be apropos to ask the department heads, anticipating that most of us haven't had will not have had our July meeting by the time you postpone this. Mm-hmm. There may be some things that come up that need to be addressed, mm-hmm. and if we cancel that meeting, mm-hmm. That could be a little awkward for things we can't even anticipate at this time. Is there something magic about that date?
No, there isn't. I just understand that many people are very busy or are going on vacation in that time frame, and I've And I believe that the end of July is very difficult, and the beginning of the first few weeks of August are difficult for many legislators.
Well, let me remind the board that the July has a fifth week in it this time around.
Yes.
And some of us, just to give you a heads up, I don't want to steal anybody else's thunder, but the 29th is when you will be receiving a notice. We had a TCAT Budget Committee meeting today, just before this meeting, and the 29th is the tentative date that we're trying to schedule the TCAT budget presentation to the three entities, like we do every year. And usually that's a noon or 1 o'clock meeting. So it won't interfere with an evening meeting if that's your wish.
Yeah, Frank, I've talked to a few legislators, and I think that because it's the fifth week of the month, that some of them are taking vacation since it doesn't conflict with many committee meetings. And so so I'm not sure how that's going to affect your the TCAT budget presentation.
I envy the luxury that some of you have to take vacation.
Yeah, I hear you. I second that.
To answer Frank's larger question about timeliness of action items that may have to happen on the 5th, if indeed they come up at a later point, we could have a very brief meeting, kind of an action-only meeting for maybe half an hour, and then go into a retreat mode. So we thought of that eventuality.
Yeah. And that's actually part of the memo that Mike is sending out to all the department heads that also presents that possibility as well.
Any further questions for Nathan on his report
before I move on to our resolution?
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to move a resolution P, establishment of guidelines and fiscal targets for all county budgeting units for the preparation of the 2009 budget.
You want to capture N first before we...
I'm sorry. Oh, yes. All right. Why don't I do N first? Yeah. Sorry. Resolution N, authorizing change in court attendance, hourly reimbursement rate, and ISO move.
Is there a second? Kathy Lucerera seconds. Kathy Lucerera, discussion.
I remember in the past we talked about this, and some of us wanted to see if we could make the court attendance hourly rate equivalent to or better than a livable wage. And it's my understanding that the fourth whereas talks about the New York State sets the rate for court attendance and pays in full for those court attendance, with the county simply serving as a fiscal agent for those wages. So the question that I have, and I think I know the answer, is why aren't we tacking some money on to make that equivalent to the livable wage, which is what we say we are, a livable wage employer?
We actually explored that in discussions with, it would make inequitable in some ways the entire state system. We also were not sure about new hires versus existing wages, and we're not sure that we wanted to go into those waters regarding the present tax base subsidizing state wages. For all those reasons, we recommend this as a way to proceed, to have a slight increment for extra responsibilities, and if indeed we are asked, are we a livable wage employer, we will say yes for the county employees that we are responsible for, with this one exception, which is basically a pass-through. So that was the resolution.
And that's why I seconded it.
Is there any further discussion before we vote? All in favor of Resolution N? This is short form roll call, excuse me.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Anyone wish to be recorded as a no? Seeing none, that's unanimous, thank you. On to P, thank you, Nathan.
All right, I'm going to move Resolution P, and then I'd like to speak about it immediately after. But moving Resolution P, and as I said, establishment of guidelines and fiscal targets for all county budgeting units for the preparation of the 2009 budget.
And I seconded by Mike Hattery. And Nathan, discussion.
Okay. So basically, what this resolution does is it establishes guidelines and fiscal targets for all of our departments and agencies. The guideline is basically going to be that moving on for the 2009 budget, it's going to be the same as the target 2008 budget, but not including the one-times, but including the negotiated salary increases for our departments. That does not include the agencies, though. And as I and I have a hunch that some of our legislators might be pushing an amendment to change that. But I want to also let everybody know that this is actually quite a remarkable achievement, and much credit must go to county administration, to the administration department, and also to all of our department heads that have worked together cooperatively on this, because it was a initially going into this, it looked like there would be the need for a broad, across the board cut to all departments, and this is not that. I mean, recognizing that there are costs that are going up this year, but we're not cutting people from the previous year's budget. This is just keeping it basically the same. And I think that achievement was done because of all the hard work that has been taking place. And again, thank you, Steve, County Administration, and all the department heads for that.
I have Martha, then Kathy Lou Herrera.
Thank you for foreshadowing what I'm about to do. I would like to make an amendment here to, in the first resolved, that item number one, and this relates to the agencies. So if I can just give the language and then explain it. For not-for-profit agency grants, fiscal targets shall be equal to the amount approved in the 2008 adopted budget, comma, plus a 3% adjustment meant for salary and benefit increases, not including a one-time funding, and that's the only change.
Is there a second to that amendment? Will Burbank? Is there discussion about that? Kathy, all that Martha discussed, then Kathy said.
I can just explain. So a 3% adjustment, because we can't tell them what to, you know, how to spend their money, but the point is that if we are including negotiated salary increases for our staff, I think this recognizes that the agencies absolutely do mainline work, do the hands-on work that our departments require, and to assume that agencies could somehow magically absorb flat funding without any sort of increase for salary and benefits is completely unrealistic. They would not be able to maintain the kind of work that we need, quality work that we need, especially because nonprofit salaries tend to be significantly below our county staff salaries, for one thing, where we see bachelor degrees. You know, you get $22,000 salary with your bachelor degree, and maybe you'll get a little bit of health care. So I feel that it was a struggle a few years ago to bring agency salaries up to the living wage. I think if we don't add a 3% in here, we will just fall behind in that, and the people who receive the services will really see the brunt of that.
Kathy Lou Herrera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As somebody that sits on the Budget Committee and somebody that has a history of supporting 0% increases if I can, if I think that it's something that I can get the majority on, a jump to supporting 3% this year was tough, but it was because I thought it was something that we could do, and we could do it in an intelligent way. When Nathan and the county administrator and others came to the Budget Committee and said, we figured out a way, talking together, we don't have to use a blunt instrument, we can, and please correct me if I'm wrong here, we can stay within the goal that the majority of the legislature has set and do it by establishing the guidelines and fiscal targets without having to say 3% across the board. I thought that was an accomplishment and something that I would be willing to support, so I voted for that in committee. I think it would be magical thinking to say that we could manage to include nonprofits in this, unless I can get some assurances from the county administrator, because, in fact, part of the reason that the whole what I call privatization exists is because we take the nonprofits We take advantage of the fact that they don't pay the same rate. We take advantage of the fact that they don't pay benefits. And we utilize their nonprofit status to be able to save taxpayers' money. It's a two-edged sword. It's not one that I'm real happy with, but nonprofits in this community deliver tremendous product, tremendous bang for the buck. However, there's a way that continued reliance on them, I think, tends to, in some ways, erode a standard of living. So it's a dilemma for me to say, let's include them, because then there's a possibility that we would be raising the amount that we've pledged to try to stay under for a tax rate increase this year. And yet, to not include them feels hypocritical. That's why I'd like at this point to ask for a clarification, because to me, including nonprofit agencies here, to make that kind of a promise when, after all, as Martha just said, we really can't tell them how to spend the money. We can't make promises. And several times in the past couple of years, we've had agencies come in and say, we had a budget for emergency vouchers, and it's a yearly budget, but the need was greater this year, so we exceeded and we spent all the money and we need some more money. That's happened a couple of times in recent past. I don't see that going away. So I'm concerned about setting that precedent by making this change that Martha is suggesting, unless somebody can say to me, no, you can still stay within the 3% that you were hoping for and that the majority supported. And that would make me think, and that might make me want to go ahead and try this. And I understand it's all an experiment, and these, you know, aren't guarantees, but it's what we're trying for. And by going into this long speech here, what I'm trying to explain is that these difficult decisions are made, you know, not out of any malice, but really out of the desire to get the best deal for the taxpayer and still manage to deliver the best services that we can with the people that we've got and try and compensate people fairly and well.
I'll add Steve to the queue to answer that question. But first, I have Mike Hattery, then Nathan Shinagawa.
I'd be opposed to this proposed change to the resolution because this is a well-crafted resolution, and it gives the county administrator some latitude in crafting a budget that meets our target. And by, you know, making that kind of locking that in, that change to item one removes that flexibility to some degree. And I, on the other hand, if there are not-for-profits that we need to go above for service delivery reasons, it gives flexibility to do that in the future. So I would be opposed to that amendment.
Nathan Shinagawa.
Yeah. Well, first off, let me say that this resolution is a result of, as I said, administration and department heads working together, but especially in administration. Norma Jane has been working on, you know, a relational database about for the budget for many years now, and that system has developed a maturity of sorts. People understand how it works. People know how to submit their budgets more efficiently now, and the relationships are all set up. And it was because of that tool that administration and department heads being willing to work with one another that we were able to have this fiscal target and guideline resolution. But speaking to the agency part of it, I want to say that I want to ask Steve, actually. Steve, does most of our funding to agencies go to fund specific positions, or is it more just kind of general kind of pots of money that we give to a certain program, let's say, or a certain agency to deliver a certain service?
Can I just get into a more general response?
Yeah, I'm going to do a general response, yeah. And then...
Okay. The sentiment is good, and I'm sure it would make people feel good, and it does value the agencies appropriately. However, it's a simple solution to a complicated problem, and often those simple solutions are not workable, and this is a good case of it. The agencies, how we fund them and how those decisions are made is very complicated, very convoluted. It's made by different boards. There are lots of different things that happen in those discussions and negotiations. There are different ways of weighting things. Some people get sales tax monies, and as you know, the sales tax has increased in the last few years. We have discussed this with some of the different, the Human Services Coalition and the Youth Board, with Nancy Zaylor anyway, trying to get some balance here. when you say that we're including the salary increases for the departments and we're trying to create balance for the agencies, that's not really true. Because what we're doing with the departments is we're negotiating with them individually. We're saying your salary increases are included, and we'll talk about your rollover, but we need to talk about the net bottom line. Sitting to my right and sitting behind me, both people gave up money to get to your target. You would be treating the agencies better than the departments. I think this is not a good idea. I would not support it. I fought hard for the right to enter into these negotiations with the departments. I think we have a very effective process. I've seen very positive responses from the departments. I would encourage you to allow us to continue with this process to meet your goals. You always have the end say at the you know, when you pass the budget, when you look at it, individual agency budgets, but I would not do an across-the-board adjustment.
Nathan, had you finished?
Yeah, I wasn't done. I mean, basically, I think that it's complicated because there are situations where we give, say, $30,000 to an organization for a program, but it's not position specific, right? So then, does that mean that agency doesn't benefit from this proposed amendment? You know, whereas the agencies where we will directly give money for a position, they'll benefit. I mean, it's very uneven, and because of its unevenness, and also because of the reasons that Steve just mentioned, I don't recommend supporting this amendment.
Okay, I don't want to lose legislators before we vote. I have Dooley Kiefer next.
The way that the agencies get treated in our budget process has not been the highlight for me in recent years. And so at our last budget retreat, several legislators made very specific the request to the county administrator to treat agencies the way we treat departments in terms of salaries. And I was surprised to see this resolution come through with no hint of that. And I agree that it's complicated and they're different. But year after year, I see them doing work that the county has to have done. And if we did it through county employees, it would cost us more. It's a very simple concept. So although I am pleased to have a county administrator who is able to look at so many things in such detail, I am uncomfortable with the result that happened last couple of years where things were called legislative cuts. I was unhappy with authorizing the county administrator to make decisions that really should be legislative decisions. And we ask you to do this work. All you can do is substitute your value system for ours. You're one person. By our stating the importance of agencies, I hope that you will not feel hamstrung by whatever comes out of this discussion tonight. I obviously support the amendment.
Have Pam, then Carol.
Well, I think that by just not even recognizing this need, I think is not a good way for us to proceed. And I'm talking about the need of agencies. I was just wondering whether it would be possible for us, instead of to set aside of creating a pot of money that would be used to focus on the needs of the agencies. I guess that if I would like to see us have something in to know how we're going to proceed with this, with these agencies, because everything else is pretty clearly laid out, and it isn't with the agencies, and I think that I, for one, would not want us to go through the whole budget process and have made no provision for the agencies. So I am open to different ideas on this, but I think that we really can't just not include anything about them in this resolution.
We do have a rigorous review process for agencies. Steve, did you have a quick response to that?
Yeah, I just want to caution you that you're talking about agencies, and you know, we have the library that's going to be talking to you. You've already approved the TC3 budget. You're going to have TCAT talking to you. You're going to make lots of decisions about agencies, and you're going to start spending money before it gets even to my desk. And you're not changing the charge to me. If you want to spend $150,000 or $200,000 or $300,000 or $400,000, then add it to my target. Don't take the money away and say, oh, by the way, we want you to hit this target. I spent 3.5 months working with the departments to get there. And then you start spending it willy-nilly at different times before the budget process. I'll tell you right now, if you start doing this, I am not going to follow through on your wishes. It's not going to work.
Have Carol, then Martha, then Nathan.
If I can directly respond to that,
sure.
To this, though. I mean, I think that, I'm actually very sensitive to this issue. If there was a way that we can, you know, do that cleanly, then I would support it. But you can't right now at this point. I want to remind everybody that there is still going to be the over-target request process. I mean, you know, and where people are going to be able to speak before the legislature with specific requests. And so that is that time and that opportunity for agencies to specifically bring that forth, as they traditionally have, and as we have very most of the time approved their, cost of living salary increases for those agencies. And so that opportunity is still there this year, and that will be the time in which we can do it, I think.
We're debating the amendment. I have Carol, Martha, Frank, then Kathy.
I share the concern that we not balance our budget on the backs of the agencies, and if it takes having Steve come back to us with something that's slightly higher, then I'd be open to that. I think that by not dealing with it at this point, we're just delaying the problem. That exactly, we're going to, on the over-target requests, have to face every agency.
But then we'll face it exactly.
Let's take our turns.
We'll have to face every agency and their constituencies, who will all, without fail, say to us, how can you expect us to balance our budgets without even recognizing the need for a cost of living for our staff? And they'll be right.
Three more speakers, and I'd like to go to a vote. If I have Frank, then Kathy, then Jim.
Lost me there.
You're right. Martha, then Frank. You're right.
Thank you. Steve, I'd be willing to consider a different mechanism. I tried to make this a the language, specific language of how we do this is not important to me. The message it sends and the reality of where it puts agency staff with respect to, you know, on a par with our county staff is important to me. At the retreat, you said, you and Norma said that the total was about $130,000, if I remember correctly. What?
Somewhere in the 130, 150 range.
I remember 130, and to treat the agencies as in the same way as departments. And Jim said it before, we'll decide where we think the money should go and where it shouldn't go. And I would, as Carol just said, be willing to relax the 3% guideline. I think the point here is we've often talked about the effect of our target on staff. When we set the target too low, we create ripple effects that affect staff, even staff decisions of whether I'm going to stay in this job, of how much stress there is in the job, et cetera. If we send a completely flat budget expectation to the agencies, which are already operating on a shoestring, and TCAT and the library, there are unionized workforces. The agencies are not unionized, and we know that those are folks who are really
doing work that is very difficult. There's often a lot of turnover because it is so difficult and so poorly paid. I would urge us that we, and it's not, I mean, putting it out there as an OTR just sends a message that this is not important work, that these jobs are not critical, and that they're extra in some way. And I really think that this is a value that I hold very strongly, and I think the work that's done is work that should be considered on a par with county work.
We're debating the amendment. Maybe some alternate language if this has not passed that I might recommend. Frank Proto, then Kathy, then Jim.
Thank you, Mike. First, the clarification. I want to go back to a suggestion that Pam made. We already have established a pot of money that we give the coalition to redistribute. And we, at one time, we used to review every single one of those requests. And we don't do that anymore. For the most part, we don't do that anymore. There may be opportunities when we have a concern or two, and we may wade into that. But generally, we give them the money and let them sprinkle it among the agencies that they're reviewing. Secondly, please don't forget from this equation, I can't dispute the impassioned pleas that some of you are making regarding the agencies, but there's also the taxpayer out there who's hurting big time. I realize that the agency folks are taxpayers too, but any of you that went to the assessment reviews already know that people have had enough. They really are getting blitzed with the taxes. My recollection is that the last several years, the maintenance of effort item has crept into our budget process. And when we did the budget the last 2 years, there were a series of maintenance of effort requests, which are just requests for salary increases, as I recollect, from the agencies. A lot of them got passed. I don't think very many of them were rejected. We have a process where our first obligation is to our own departments, and I'm not trying to demean the agencies, believe me, but we have to make sure that we have enough support to provide those services and to our departments or through our departments for what we need to do. That doesn't mean that the agencies aren't doing a good job. It means that they're in control of their own budget. The monies that they receive, they ought to determine how they want to spend that money. I understand that there's a concern about how much we give them, but we haven't even formally begun the budget process yet, and we're already tinkering with the resolution on how we want to redistribute the money. I think Steve has been pretty straightforward in saying, I may not be able to deliver what you're asking me to deliver if you keep changing the guidelines. I've seen this board operate for several years. Even though, yes, several, couple. We're not shy about changing our targets, believe me. As we go through the budget process, if there's a convincing argument, we play with those numbers. We've come in slightly above our targets from time to time. This is a guideline. Let's let the budget process work. And if there's an opportunity for, and believe me, especially on my committee, we will hear from all the agencies that need adjustments. I can guarantee there are very few that are shrinking violets among our agency people. Let's let the process play out. This is the middle of June. And let Steve do his work. He's already, as you said, or as you heard, managed to meet with the departments, and they're all trying to comply. Some have given up dollars already. David always manages to squirrel away about $5 million in sales tax receipts that he doesn't tell us about, and he manages to pull our bacon out of the fire at the last minute. So, and that usually happens around October, right, David? So let's see what happens. And I understand what Martha's plea is for, but we haven't even really begun the budget process yet. So I'd like to say I'd like to support this because Carol knows I made a plea at the budget retreat for this type of thing. But I think if we're going to start changing the guideline that we set, what's the sense of having the guideline?
Yeah. Have Kathy, then Jim, then I'll speak with some possible language changes, then Pam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I first read this, and it seemed like a long time ago, and asked the questions, I didn't quite realize what was going on, and I apologize for being late to the party, but I see now that what this is actually moving toward changing our target, and I'm not interested in doing that. I listened to what Steve said. I hear loud and clear. I vied for the honor of being a legislator. I vied for the honor of having people stop me on the street and tell me their woes about taxes. And I know it's an inconvenience sometimes to some of us to have individual agencies and individuals coming up to us and telling us what they think and what they need, but it's a fact of life, and I'm willing to stand up to that because part of what we're supposed to do is make intelligent and balanced decisions, and this will maybe be tough, but I agree with what some others have said about the process that was set with the original resolution that we passed. I think this was pretty much subverted. So I apologize for my ambivalence in the beginning, a lack of understanding. My questions have been answered, and I won't be supporting any change that involves changing the agencies, the funding for, you know what I'm saying. What we have in place is going to work, and we got to stick with what we've got.
Jim Dennis?
Thank you, Mike. Greg and I represent an area that have people that uses a lot of these outside agencies for all the things that they do. And Lord knows, as far as I'm concerned, yeah, I'd love to see those people make money on par with the county employees. And in that, you know, so I might suggest a 5% as opposed to a 3% because that's what the inflation rate is. But my point is, I think you have to let the county administrator go through the process and see where it comes out. And for us to, we tinkered a little bit today. We supported 5-4. TC3, which, and we had a 3% thing that we all voted on. And I really think I hate to say it, we're wasting time in
go ahead
this
and say
particular
it, it's
night.
Okay.
And, you know, let them do their work and see how it comes out. 2 years ago, we had a parade of people coming to this legislature, and it was not a pretty sight, those agencies. Last year, it worked a lot better. My sense is this year it will work similar to last year, and I just really want to see Steve and his folks and the Budget Committee do their work and not make any changes.
No. I'm going to speak. I want to, if it's not passed, I would entertain a motion on the final resolved to include agency targets in that. So instead of saying reduce department targets, I would say reduce department targets and adjust agency targets. That gives our county administrator, if information comes to him in the budget process, he may be able to make those adjustments. But that will happen if indeed this does not pass. Let's go on to Pam.
Well, I was going to offer a substitute resolution or a substitute language for number one, which would just be for not-for-profit agency grants, fiscal targets shall be equal to the amount approved in the 2008 adopted budget with consideration given to cost of living increases.
That's nebulous enough that it's hard to know what that means. But is there a second for that language?
Well, the only reason I say it is just because it recognizes the need.
Yes. Is there a second for the language?
Don't we have to take care of the
resolution? Amendment on the floor.
This would be the amendment to the amendment.
Well, is that what it is?
No. It's a different
language. This is different language.
Wouldn't you say, I'm sorry.
I believe Pam has offered an amendment to Martha's language. Is there a second, which would be an amendment to the amendment?
Wait, wouldn't Martha decide whether it's considered?
If it's not friendly, she can amend it. Is there a second? Seeing none, we're back to Martha's language, and I have Will Burbank next.
As the new guy in the block, I have not been through this process, and I have really been trying to listen to all of you and give due respect for, I think, what all of you are going through and the experience you bring to this process. Just looking at it clearly, though, it seems to me that we are doing this incrementally, and we are sort of moving toward situations where then it gets ever harder to look back and change. This is a pivotal thing. We are fundamentally, it seems to me, deciding that we will reduce our support for nonprofits effectively, because they are all dealing with inflationary pressures. They are all dealing with situations of soft money, grants that don't come through. For the county to do that at this time, we are sending a very, very strong message that I do not want to send. So I strongly support this this amendment.
I think we're ready to vote. Martha Robertson.
Yeah, I just think it is, I think, our job to give guidance to the administration. And this is a key point in our deliberations. And I'm not saying this as a, you know, I don't want to upend the work you've already done. I respect the work you've already done. But I think that it is important for us to shape this process as well. Otherwise, why would we be voting on this at all? So I'm certainly interested. If this doesn't fail, and I suppose it will fail, if this fails, and it looks like it will, I would be interested in other language. But it is important to me to send the message through the system that the nonprofits matter a great deal to us.
I think we're ready to vote. The amendment on the floor is...
Missing a legislator.
Well, that's his choice to be out of the room at this moment. I'll just remind you what we're voting on. Resolution P, Martha added plus a 3% adjustment for salaries and benefit increases, something like that. I'll wait for Frank to return to the room.
Debbie's going to vote against
right, that's
it,
fine.
Only the positive votes count.
That's right.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm sure he'll want to be recorded.
Now, Pam, we're out of the room.
You might be stopping bank robbers, all right?
Are we ready to vote on Resolution P, the amendment? All in favor?
Doesn't look like we're ready to vote.
Dooley, do you have a quick comment?
Well, while Frank was out, I thought maybe it was reasonable to spell out that Steve always has the option of telling us in his proposed budget that he can't meet the guidelines we set. And
yes,
that may be the effect of this amendment, but it's not the end of the world.
Okay. I think we're ready to vote on the amendment to Resolution P. All in favor of Martha's wording? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Opposed? Looks like 8. Is that right? It fails 5-8. We're back to the main motion as presented. Frank Proto.
I'd like to call a question on the main motion.
Is there a second to call the question? Mike Hattery. The motion to call the question is non-debatable. All in favor of calling the question? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Opposed?
Strongly.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Is that right? Mm-hmm. The question's been called. All in favor of the main motion, Resolution P, as presented from committee. All in favor, please raise your hand and keep it high. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That passes 8-5. Thank you, Nathan, for your report.
Thank you.
I'll ask again, do we need a break or keep moving forward?
What else do we have?
We have two committee reports and one final resolution, which is lifting from the table and postponed one.
Three committee reports,
okay. Public safety, Public Safety Committee, do we have a report from Public Safety besides the resolution?
No report, the committee meets Friday, June 20th.
Thank you. Lesman Levine Claiborne is not here to deliver the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Report, but they are meeting next Wednesday. Frank Proto, Health and Human Services Committee Chair.
Yes, and I have an extensive report for you this evening. First, the committee met on the 4th, and we had a very interesting presentation from several of the agencies. One that you'll be very happy to hear about is the Drop-In Children's Center. David Skavonik came and reported to us that the agency is doing very well. Remember, we had a discussion around this table last year about advancing them $50,000. They've actually made quite a turnaround. He's hired an additional individual to share the responsibilities. That individual is doing the program piece, and David is doing the finance piece. His greatest concern at this point is trying to keep staff. The teaching staff is under some strain because with the university coming online with their daycare center, what his worry is, they're able to offer a higher salary to those people. There are several other, in the interest of time, I'll try to shorten this. There are several concerns that were raised about what they're going to do to make sure that the appropriate slots stay open. And with a question that was raised by one of my committee members, they can only provide space if a certified teacher is there to make sure that the child is properly supervised. So that's why it's important that they keep their teaching staff up to snuff. One of the other items that they're looking at is making sure that they have an accreditation. Patricia Carey was there to clarify the Office for Children and Family Services approach. They're discussing with them the accreditation process for the center itself. But I thought you'd appreciate knowing that with all the deliberations that went on here last year about whether we should advance the money or not, here's an agency, based on the discussion we just had about the guidelines, here's an agency that backed off and actually did a lot of work to reconfigure themselves, and they're on, according to David now, they're on relatively sound financial footing. They're not home yet, but they're certainly going in that direction. But I thought you'd appreciate hearing that.
That's great.
The second is we had a presentation by Nancy Zaylor and Nancy Zook regarding the youth services, quite extensive. I won't go into every bit of detail, but just so you know, about 3,200 kids participated in the municipal youth services system programs. This is not the REC partnership. This is in addition to that. And part of it, and based on the presentation we had some 3 hours ago regarding the workforce from the Workforce Development Board about retaining jobs, there are 544 kids that are in municipally supported jobs at this point. They're in the jobs program. I asked out loud how much those jobs represented monetarily. And Nancy indicated that the money that they generate circulates three times in the community, and there's an opportunity for those kids to stay employed. So it's been very worthwhile, and she's quite pleased with the outcome. As everything else, there's more work that needs to be done, but in this case, they're making some positive headway. The two items that are right at the top of the list where the youth are concerned, one of my all-time favorites, and I turn to Karen, is internet access / broadband. A lot of these kids are trying to get their homework done, and they have access to computers in a lot of cases, but they don't have internet, broadband internet, or internet access, and that's been a concern. And we've already gotten some letters drafted to our federal representatives to see if we can change the universal fund to include broadband internet. There is another piece of that too. The homeschool kids cannot be left out of this picture at all. The second key item is transportation, getting kids to where they need to be in order to access these jobs is a major concern, and both Nancy's are working on that with TCAT. We had a part of their presentation was also with regard to the how they relate to the agencies, and of the 18,000 kids in the community, about 10,000 of them, this is 0 to 17-year-olds, take advantage of some of the programs that are offered through the agencies. I won't go into that report. There's a copy that will be available for you to review. It's very, very interesting reading.
Frank, can I ask a question?
Sure.
Did you just say use the Universal Phone Fund for broadband?
Well,
to be honest, that's the first time I've ever heard anybody say that.
Well, I've been writing letters for 5 years about that. We need to get federal legislation changed because the legislation currently doesn't permit that.
Yeah.
And that's what we've been running into at the state level. We brought this up when Tim and I went up to at that governor's conference some time ago. That was one of the key issues. The former governor, Mr. Spitzer, that was one of the key issues. We couldn't access the fund because the feds need to change the legislation. And the letters that we've drafted specifically ask our federal representatives to start the ball rolling. I don't want to get off on a tangent here, but that's
thank you.
One. I'm being tolerant because it's been a
so
long
time. If they did this, would it put you in favor
of
the Universal Fund?
Sure. I'm in favor of the Universal Fund. It's just the concern is right. We need, we're sitting on $6 billion here, folks, and we can't get to it. That's the frustrating part.
Other highlights from committee meeting.
Let's keep going.
Send them an email.
Believe it.
You can't get broadband. Did you see you?
I love
it.
Another item that was brought up, the Health and Human Services Committee, as one of our objectives this year, has been to highlight the concern about autism. Just to let you know that on May 30th, there was a forum. I have to read this. It was entitled Autism and Sensory Integration Perspectives. It was held up at the Ramada. 161 people participated. Very, very well done. Sylvia Allinger and Bob DeLuca were the leaders in the discussion. And they're auguring to have another one because it's such a tough issue. One of the items that came out of this is that the state is changing the guidelines to define what autism is, and that's why the spectrum has broadened. Some of these kids that may have been diagnosed with schizophrenia really are autistic kids. And that's Bob was very descriptive about that. The second piece of it, keeping on our education track, is that we're trying. Remember last year we were talking about how do emergency responders respond to someone that they've that has autism if they're out on a call? There isn't any formal training for that at this point. And Sylvia and Bob have agreed that we ought to be looking at a conference to pull those, expose that entire area to some sort of training. And we were assured that they're working with the Broome Development Center in order to pull that off. Lee Shurtleff has been contacted on that as well. I won't go into the certificate of need. We're going to be talking about that in a few minutes. I have to be careful how I paraphrase this piece because it involves Lakeside Nursing Home. Just to let you know in broad general terms, the assisted living and the adult daycare, it looks like they're moving towards approval. A formal news release, and we do not have permission from Peregrine to release the information. I think it ought to come from them. Just be assured that all the work that this group did, and some of you right around this table did it, it's probably going to pay off. And that's as much as I want to say right now because I think there needs to be a formal announcement.
Thank you for those highlights. Any questions for Frank? Nate?
I just wanted to say that, it's great, Frank, about Lakeside. I think that, the skilled nursing beds is one thing, but the rehabilitation and the adult daycare and assisted living components are what was necessary to stabilize the finances for Lakeside.
And the 400 to 500 jobs that it's going to save of the employees.
Absolutely.
And also,
I just wanted to quickly say that with the drop-in children's center, a year ago when that was happening, Steve Witcher did a lot of work on really, making the case that they could turn around, and he lent his kind of financial eyes and ears to making that case and showing us. And also, I want to also say that after we gave the Drop-In Children's Center that $50,000, it was county legislators, department heads in the Human Services Coalition and the Drop-In Children's Center that worked together as well on helping create this turnaround plan. So it's great news, and I'm glad that was reported.
Could I finish my report?
Oh, sorry, I didn't realize.
We'll remind people that the point of reports is highlights. If people want the full minutes, they can get them from the clerk of the legislature. But yes, one more highlight.
The next committee meeting is July 2nd. It's supposed to be a joint meeting with facilities, if you recall. And in regard to... Oh, I'm sorry. It was postponed till the 19th. Okay. Forget what I said. We're going to reschedule that meeting. Thanks, Karen. So I get one more highlight, Mike. with regard to workforce, there is on file in the board office the local public health workforce in New York, the statewide comparisons. You saw part of the information earlier this evening, but Alice made sure that we had a copy of this, and it shows the nursing shortage, not only in our county, but statewide. Good opportunity for people to work.
We've cruised past our three-hour mark. Are there any questions for Frank before we move on to an item that could be lifted from the table from last meeting?
No, we have one more resolution, my friend.
I didn't think we did, but if you do, let me know. What do you think? Something get pulled off consent?
What is this?
Yes, that was on consent and it passed without being pulled off.
Oh, thank you.
Would someone like to lift something from the table?
Yes, no? I'd like to lift
Mike Hattery had a question.
I wanted to make two brief notes. I said I didn't have any report. There were two things I wanted to mention. Did everybody get a item about the Tompkins County's library's partner proposal for a partnership for a permanent Sunday library?
Yes.
Well, you did because you're on the committee. Anyway, I'm seeing some quiz faces. Library came in and talked to us on an information basis about a proposal they're making for a partnership to create a permanent Sunday library service that would involve equal contributions, and I think this is the important part, from the town of Ithaca and the city of Ithaca and the county. They're going to return after they get some sense about what the city and the town are willing to do with that proposal. And I thought that was worth noting. Secondly, our August meeting, we're hoping to have half of that meeting be a joint with Budget and Capital to discuss and have a presentation from the Core Performance Committee about their findings and proposals for county action.
Thank you. Are we still having a meeting with the library tomorrow?
Yes.
The one they called us.
Yes.
Thank you.
Is there someone who would like to lift Resolution 108 from the table?
Yes. Why don't I try to lift Resolution 108?
Frank Proto moved to lift it. Is there a second to lift it?
We'd agreed that it would be done tonight, if you notice.
This is the Ag District in... We postponed it till the night. Frank has moved to lift the Ag District resolution from the table. Is there a second?
Oh, I'll second.
Kathy second. It's now lifted from the table. Is there any new information? This is unfinished business.
What a setup that was.
We postponed it till tonight. Michael Hattery.
Yeah, I'll try to be brief. Thank you all for letting me agreeing to postpone it, at least a majority of you, until this week. There was a meeting on the 11th of the village, Dryden Village Board, who, as you may recall, filed a letter in objection to these two parcels being added to the Ag District. And my hope was that by the two parties meeting face-to-face, you know, there might be some budging one way or the other in terms of either Mr. Miller feeling more comfortable with the village's, you know, oversight of land use and restrictions on his use of his property for agricultural purposes, or that the village would say, after having had this conversation, withdraw their objection to these parcels. As you heard earlier, Mr. Miller still would like to see that added to the Ag District. The village board took no action to change their conclusion that they would like not like this in the district. Let me just comment briefly to say that, for me, this balances two important values. One, the value of people being able to do, having some liberty to do with their property what they want to do to make a living and to use it fruitfully. And another, I think, important value, which is that we hold in New York State, which is local land use control by those folks that have to live with and manage land use around that parcel. And so it's difficult to say. This is kind of has those two values involved. My reading on the situation, which is where I was last year when we voted on it the last time, is that both of these are accommodated without the parcels being added to the Ag District. Mr. Miller's made it clear that he does not plan to bring animals. He wants to use this for cropland. All of that's permitted under the current both land use, the village's zoning law, the village's proposed guidelines under their new comprehensive plan. And I don't see a conflict. There's some concern on both parties' part about what will happen in the future. And I feel this way, and that is that we, nor the Ag Land Protection Board, are going to have to live with this. Village governing board and the village planning officials are going to have to live with future land use conflicts. I would urge you to oppose adding this to the land, to the Farmland Protection Board, oppose the resolution for those reasons.
Thank you for the summary. Thank you for your advice. Dooley Kiefer.
I would like to offer an additional whereas, because some of this history isn't in this resolution. Whereas the Village of Dryden, by letter dated May 29, 2008, subsequent to the county's PDEQ recommendation, has again expressed opposition to the addition of the Miller parcels as being in, quote, direct conflict with several village local laws and the village's comprehensive plan, unquote.
Would that be friendly, Michael? Who moved it originally?
I did.
Well, that's the lifting it from the table, but don't we have to go back to the person who moved it?
Martha.
I think Martha and?
Carol.
Carol. Is that friendly to you that the whereas addition? Yes?
Yes.
And Carol. Yes. Okay, that's now friendly. Are we ready to vote on the original resolution, which has been lifted from the table?
Wait. So we don't have to vote to lift it?
No, we did. Didn't we?
No,
we didn't. You're right.
No,
sorry, I missed that. All in favor of lifting it from the table, excuse me.
It's easier not to lift it.
Okay, that looks like it's unanimous. Any opposed? Okay.
Okay. Now, can you read the proposed addition, please?
I did not write fast enough. It was just giving a little piece of history
just history that explains.
Dryden Village Board weighing in.
Whereas the Village of Dryden, by letter dated May 29, 2008, subsequent to the county's PDEQ committee recommendation, has again expressed opposition to the addition of the Miller parcels as being in, quote, direct conflict with several village local laws and the village's comprehensive plan.
Mr. Chair, that has been moved and seconded?
That has already been admitted as friendly, so it's now part of the resolution. Okay. Frank Proto.
That is incorrect.
The village's comprehensive plan provides for open space, so that is an incorrect...
It's a quote from the village's letter.
But it's incorrect. So the addition to it should not be, it should be voted on, because it's not a, well, anyway.
At this point, it's friendly. Martha Robertson.
I accept it as friendly, even though the sentiment doesn't support the resolution.
Yeah, because it's accurate.
And it's accurate.
As
I think it's useful
letter.
To have it in there. And it's actually part of the reason I'm going to vote against the resolution.
Okay. Are we all ready to vote for or against this resolution as a friendly amendment? All in favor of adding the Miller parcels to Ag District Number 1, please raise your hand and keep them up. And those opposed? That fails 2-11. Who would like to move the minutes of our previous meeting, June 3rd? Jim Dennis moves them. And Martha Robertson seconds. Is there clarification? If it's minor, you can pass it on to the clerk without...
Oh, Julie, did you add those changes that I...
Yes.
Oh, you did? Okay, great. Thanks.
I wasn't sure it was minor. It was in Stu Stein's presentation where we you have in there STPB, and I think it should be PDEQ.
Right.
So I don't know if consider that minor or not.
It's okay.
Committee.
Yeah, that's a minor thing that we can catch.
Okay.
As noted, are we ready to vote? All in favor of the minutes of June 3rd? Any opposed? Motion to go into executive session, hopefully a brief executive session. Jim Dennis moves. Kathy Bucerrera seconds. The subject is what? Litigation. The subject of our executive session is litigation. All in favor of going into executive session? Opposed? We do not expect to take any action, so we can shut down the cameras and we'll not be coming back into session. Thank you.
Oh, man. 3.5 hours.